Good Friday to you. Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by our friends at Nosler. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Cam Edwards, your host, glad that you've joined us this afternoon. Getting ready to head up to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania for the final weekend of the Great American Outdoor Show. Hopefully I have a chance to see you there Saturday and Sunday. We're going to be doing some interviews all weekend long, but I will have time to chat. So please, if you are coming to Harrisburg, stop by the NRA News set. Ed Morrissey of Hot Air is going to join us on the program in just a little bit, talking about some of the big news of the week, including the latest Democratic debate. I don't know if that actually even qualifies for big news. Maybe it's just me. I completely forgot that it was on last night and was reminded when a friend of mine texted me and said, "This is really boring." And I said, "What is really boring?" And they said, "The Democratic debate." I said, "Oh, that was on, huh?" So apparently I didn't miss much, but I bet Ed was watching. Kimberly Corbin, who was a member of the audience there, got to ask a question of President Barack Obama at the CNN Town Hall style event on gun control. Kimberly, a survivor of sexual assault, on the new partnership between Cosmo Magazine and the Bloomberg anti-gun groups. I think it's Everytown, promoting gun control, particularly for single women, and sort of poo-pooing the idea that firearms for self-defense is anything that anybody would ever want to actually exercise. Now, we will head to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the Great American Outdoor Show. Cameron Gray talking with Michael Waddell from Michael Waddell's Bone Collector and Realtree Road Trips on Outdoor Channel. Also, Louie and Teresa Tuminaro from The Gunfather on Outdoor Channel will join us in Hour 3. We'll talk as well in Hour 2 with Mary Callison from 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control. Cabela's is hosting another NRA weekend this weekend, February 13th and 14th, at Cabela's all across the country. Mary is actually going to be speaking at the Dundee, Michigan Cabela's on a Second Amendment women's panel. So we'll talk with Mary coming up in Hour 2. Also, our friend Tony Katz, host of Tony Katz in the Morning News on WIBC in Indianapolis, Indiana, will close us out this afternoon. We have the hero of the day. We have the deal of the day. Our good guy of the day coming up on the program as well. And I want to get to some of the latest Second Amendment news and information for you. Yesterday, an appeal was filed in Connecticut. It was filed in the Supreme Court, but it's dealing with Connecticut's gun control laws passed in 2013, signed by Governor Daniel Malloy, after the murders at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. Now, the Second Circuit is the circuit, the Court of Appeals that heard this case. And they said, yeah, these bans are okay. These bans are fine. We know now that there's a split in the circuit courts because last week the Fourth Circuit in Maryland said, hey, you know, these firearms actually are protected under the Second Amendment. And so therefore, if you are to try to consider a gun control law, try to consider a ban on these firearms, you need to be able to justify it under strict scrutiny, under the highest judicial standard that we have. There has to be a compelling governmental interest, and the action taken must be the narrowest action possible, tailored specifically to that compelling governmental interest. So we do have a split between the courts, and this will be the first time that the Supreme Court would have the opportunity to take up a case dealing with a semi-auto ban since that split has developed. Now, back in the at the time the Second Circuit issued its decision, which was October of last year, a few months ago, Dave Koppel had a piece of the Vala Conspiracy in which he discussed the Second Circuit's opinion. He said it exemplifies the pattern in many lower federal courts of defying the Supreme Court's admonition in McDonald versus Chicago that the Second Amendment is not a, quote, second-class right subject to an entirely different body of rules than the other Bill of Rights guarantees. Again, that's from the McDonald decision. We talk a lot and we quote a lot from the Heller decision, but the McDonald decision, again, struck down Chicago's handgun ban, said that the Second Amendment, its protections don't just apply against interference by the federal government, but interference from state and local governments as well. This is an individual fundamental right. And the court again made it clear in McDonald that it's not a second-class right. You don't come up with different rules for the Second Amendment than you would any other right found in the Bill of Rights. And we know with the First Amendment, for instance, strict scrutiny, that highest judicial standard, is the standard that is typically used. Dave says the Second Circuit opinion had three key flaws, finding that guns that are more accurate and easier to use may be prohibited because of these advantages, not following the Heller-McDonald methodology for review of arms bans, and creating a second-class, weak version of intermediate scrutiny for the Second Amendment. So, again, the issue of what standard of judicial review do you use comes into play here. There is a split in the courts, with the Fourth Circuit saying the Supreme Court has told us strict scrutiny is the proper method of judicial review to use because we are talking about a right that is not a second-class right. Other courts, including the Second Circuit, have tried to get around that by saying, well, look, in Heller, you know, there was the language about this decision shouldn't automatically mean that other longstanding laws like, you know, a ban on felons legally being able to own firearms should be thrown out. And so because the court said in Heller, well, look, you know, not all the gun laws are going to get thrown out here, that must mean that, you know, the bar is pretty low as to whether or not a gun law can stand up to judicial scrutiny. So instead of actually treating the Second Amendment like any other right, yes, we can. That would be the legal theory anyway. We can go ahead and treat it differently. We can treat it as a some sort of lesser right. Well, again, the case now being appealed to the Supreme Court out of Connecticut. The Connecticut Post with a story says some legal observers say the plaintiffs in the case may find the court unreceptive. Connecticut Post says in 2008, the court stated that the Second Amendment does, in fact, confer the right of individuals to own firearms. And it, by the way, it doesn't confer. It didn't create this right. It didn't establish this right. And the court said as much in Heller. I'm always concerned when I see a reporter try to tell me what a court case said when they probably haven't read the opinion. The Second Amendment, in fact, the Bill of Rights, didn't create any new rights. They protected existing rights. Remember, we can go back to the preamble of the Bill of Rights, which explains exactly why these amendments were brought forth. The conventions of a number of the states, having at the time of their adopting the Constitution, expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added. Not restrictive clauses restricting the people, restrictive clauses restricting the government. In order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers. These were areas of our life that, again, our forefathers already enjoyed freedom and liberty in these spheres. These were areas in which we, the people, the ones who ratify the Constitution, you know, we, the people, in order to form a more perfect union, we, the people, told the government, can't go here. Can't mess with our freedom of religion. Can't mess with our ability to peaceably assemble. You can't mess with our freedom of speech, whether it's verbal or through the use of the printing press. You can't quarter troops in our homes like they did in Boston. We have a right to be secure in our persons and our property. We have a right to keep and bear arms. Again, all of these were reminders They were explicit protections of pre-existing rights that the American people wanted in the Constitution, because they were afraid if they weren't there, at some point, the federal government would overstep its bounds. So no, they did not confer any rights on Americans at all. But the Connecticut Post says, the opinion of Justice Antonin Scalia said that Second Amendment rights are, quote, not unlimited. That's not the issue here. And again, we have not just the Heller case, but we have the McDonald case, where the Supreme Court has said Second Amendment is just as fundamental a right as any other right that's listed there in the Bill of Rights. And you can't hold it to some sort of lesser standard. Adam Winkler, UCLA law professor, says the Supreme Court is not likely to hear this case. Says the area of law has many open questions, and lower courts look to the Supreme Court for guidance. In the Second Amendment area, that guidance has been absent. Well, I don't know how likely or unlikely it is that the court will take this case. Generally speaking, it's unlikely that the Supreme Court will take any case, because they have about 10,000 cases that are presented to them that they can pick and choose from, and only a handful will the court actually accept in any given term. So I suppose by that measure, the Supreme Court is not likely to hear this case, but it's not likely to hear any one case that is brought before it. Now, having said that, and again, Adam Winkler doesn't know what the court's going to do. I don't know what the court's going to do. We know because of a couple of written dissents that there are at least two justices who think that it's time for the court to take up a Second Amendment case again. But you need four justices to agree to hear a case, and you need five for a majority opinion in a case. We know we have two justices wanting to hear a case right now. But that's basically all that we know. There aren't too many leaks out of the Supreme Court. But we do have this one additional bit of information, and that is, again, that the Fourth Circuit now disagrees with the Second Circuit handling the Connecticut case. It disagrees with the Seventh Circuit, which upheld the semi-auto ban in Highland Park, Illinois. And, in fact, the Fourth Circuit majority opinion specifically said, we have issues with the Seventh Circuit opinion, and here's why. Now, it is also possible that, in fact, I think it is likely that Maryland's Attorney General, who worked to pass the anti-gun laws in Maryland, that he'll appeal that Fourth Circuit decision. The question is, again, where does he appeal it to? Does he appeal the case up to the Supreme Court? Or does he try to slow walk the case and instead ask for an en banc review, or allow the case to go back down to the trial court level? They start all over again, in which case it could be a couple of years before that decision gets before the Supreme Court. If he simply accepts the decision to send it back down to the trial court, well, he's also accepting the judgment of the Fourth Circuit. So the most likely, it seems to me anyway, action for the Attorney General of Maryland would be to appeal the case. The question then becomes, do you appeal it en banc, ask the entire Fourth Circuit to rehear this case, or do you expedite the process a little bit and go up to the Supreme Court? Again, have no idea what the Attorney General will do, but he only has a couple of weeks in which to decide his course of action. And in the meantime, the Supreme Court is aware of this Fourth Circuit decision. The Supreme Court is aware that there is now a difference of opinion among the courts of appeals as to, again, a variety of open questions, but in particular, the standard of review that should be used to justify these gun control laws. Remember, it was in the Second Circuit where the judge said, yes, these firearms are commonly owned, and they are commonly owned by many lawful Americans for many lawful purposes. But even with that being the case, because we're not going to use strict scrutiny as our standard of review, it's okay to ban these firearms that we just acknowledged are protected under the Second Amendment. It's okay to ban this entire class of firearms that the Supreme Court said can't really ban an entire class of firearms. The Second Circuit said, yeah, we can. Even though these guns are, these are arms that are protected under the Second Amendment, we can because there's such a compelling reason. Compelling reason is public safety. And because we're not going to use the highest level of standard review, as long as we can say that there's some reasonable correlation between the state's desire for public safety and the enactment of this gun ban, yeah, the law stands. Now, that is, again, a very different decision than what was reached in the Fourth Circuit in Maryland. Doesn't mean that the Supreme Court is guaranteed to hear the case. But it does mean that now, again, there's a definite difference of opinion in the courts of appeal. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, Ed Morrissey of Hot Air is going to join us, talking about some of the big stories of the week, including the presidential primary in New Hampshire and a look ahead to South Carolina. Stick around. We have much more NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, coming up right after this.
I'm speaking with Sergeant Major Lance Nutt. He's president and founder of Sheepdog Impact Assistance. Tell us what Sheepdog Impact Assistance is all about.
Well, when we refer to the term of sheepdog, it's referring to one of society's protectors. It's the men and women that serve in the military, law enforcement, fire and rescue ranks. It's that type of man or woman that's willing to put their life on the line for you and me, for everyday service and the things that we live and take for granted. It takes a unique individual to go out there and make sure that we're able to appreciate the freedoms that exist for us. And when we talk about society's protectors, it's truly its sheepdogs, those men and women willing to give it all.
So where did this concept come from?
Well, for us and myself as a Marine of 28 years, it was quickly understanding with multiple deployments under my back and so many of my own Marines and soldiers and sailors that I had served with, seeing the difficulties they had in returning home. Part of that was that continued service opportunity. When you step away from something that means so much to you and having given so much of your life in service, we felt that we needed an organization that would give you that opportunity to continue giving back to your country. And we initially formed as a disaster response organization and have morphed into so much more that truly defines who and what we are as individuals, our members and our volunteers. But more importantly, we're making sure that those men and women that have suffered a traumatic injury, and that could be emotional or physical trauma, that we give them the opportunity to get up off their butts and continue to live their lives.
It's awesome. Sergeant Major Lance Nutt with Sheepdog Impact Assistance. How can we get more information about your wonderful organization?
Well, we encourage people to visit our website at www.sheepdogia.org, and that's that'll give them an opportunity to learn a lot more about what we're accomplishing and how we're helping these men and women continue on with their lives.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for being on NRA News.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Speaking with Juliana Crowder with A Girl and a Gun. Juliana, welcome back to NRA News. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous.
Tell folks, what is A Girl and a Gun?
A Girl and a Gun is an organization for women, and we get them out to the shooting range. We have activities for ladies who are brand new all the way through experienced shooters. So we offer kind of like a social club. But we also are being very serious about safety and training, and then also helping women reach certain goals with firearms that they might have.
Why did you start this?
It was really important for me to see more women out in the competitive shooting sports and also taking more responsibility for their personal safety. So I wanted to have kind of like a happy hour or a non-confrontational experience at the range.
Right.
So we just started hosting Girls Night Out and making it a social experience and then slowly introducing the more serious training aspect.
Well, whether it's shooting sports or hunting or anything, there's much more than just the aspect of picking up the gun. You're right. It's a social thing that involves friends, family, mentoring, whatever it involves, it's right. So important to make that work. Good. So just give us a flavor of some of the stuff you like to do.
So We like to go shoot IDPA and three gun. We have ladies going on hunts for the first time.
Cool.
We have ladies learning about archery.
All right, good.
We share experience about holsters, guns, different gear and equipment that might work better for certain
body types. A lot different for men and women.
And we're also sharing the emotional experience of being a firearms owner, because for some it could be a traumatic transition from something that's happened in their life, and for others it's a very joyful experience of liberation and empowerment. So we really are offering something for everyone.
Awesome. How can people get more information about A Girl on a Gun?
They can find us at agirlonagun.org, and we're also on Facebook.
Juliana Crowder, A Girl on a Gun, thank you so much for being on NRA News. You're always there for us, but thank you for what you do. Thank you for your passion. You keep it up, and we'll talk to you soon.
Oh, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Your first source for Second Amendment news and information. It is NRA News, Cam and Company, still to come. We've got news on campus carry in the state of Kansas to tell you about. But right now, I want to welcome to the program our friend Ed Morrissey from Hot Air. How are you today, sir?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. It's always good to have you here. So were you surprised by any of the results in Tuesday's primary in New Hampshire?
I was surprised, yes, by the amount that Hillary Clinton lost by. I wasn't really terribly surprised on the Republican side. Maybe Rubio slipping down from expected second or third to fifth was a bit of a surprise, but they were pretty closely bunched in that 3 through 5 range. They were only about 1.5% or about 2 percentage points between the three of those candidates. But the surprise for me was the scope of Hillary Clinton's loss. This is a state that she won 39.1% of the vote in 2008 in essentially at the time a 5-person race. And she didn't even get to that level in a 2-person race 8 years later. I mean, she only got 38.4% of the vote in New Hampshire, while Bernie Sanders got 60.3, I think it was. It was basically a 22-point margin in the race. And I was very surprised by that. I thought that she'd lose by maybe, I had said 15 points, and I thought that was actually maybe a bit of an exaggeration. That'd be closer to like 10 or 11. I was really surprised that she lost it by as wide a margin as she did, and across pretty much every demographic.
Well, absolutely. And you know, one set of numbers in the exit polls that a lot of folks have been talking about this week, the number of voters, about a third of Democratic primary voters, said that the number one consideration for them was honesty. Even before you got to policy, it was just honesty. And among those voters, Bernie Sanders led Hillary Clinton, 92-6?
93-5.
93-5, even.
93-5, yeah, with a third of the voters, which gives you an idea where the problem lie. You know, that was I think really the big issue for her, is that people just don't trust her. And part of the reason is because she's basically talking out of both sides of her mouth all the time, all of the time. And she started off this race basically talking about how she was going to be, you know, a continuity for, you know, to consolidate the gains of the Obama administration. And when Bernie started catching fire, it was all of a sudden she was more progressive than the Pope of Greenwich Village. And now she's kind of leaning back the other way again. And people are looking at that, even beyond the email stuff and the Clinton Foundation stuff, which is bad enough as it is. And all you got to do is follow her campaign rhetoric and realize that she doesn't mean a thing that she says.
So does any of that here's the weird question, Ed. Does any of that matter in the South Carolina Democratic primary?
For Hillary Clinton, yeah, I think it does matter. I think that it's possible that, you know, the polling in South Carolina has been sparse. In Nevada, too, for that matter, which is another upcoming event for them. And it's been, you know, very clearly overwhelmingly favoring Hillary, the polling that exists has. But here's the thing. Hillary Clinton tied in Iowa against Bernie Sanders, right, against a guy who's a socialist who didn't even identify as a Democrat until he started running for president. And he just clobbered her in New Hampshire. And I think when you look at that, it tends to undermine this whole aura of inevitability that was really the argument for voting for Hillary at all, was that, well, she's going to be the nominee anyway. There's not much of a better choice. And so voting for Sanders is sort of a waste of time. Well, the people in New Hampshire more or less showed that it's not a waste of time, and that when it comes to Hillary, she may be so bad of a candidate that they have to have almost anybody else in that slot if they have a hope of winning.
Well, okay, so this leads me to my next question. What do you think about the floaters, the trial balloons that Michael Bloomberg will hop into the race? If it looks like Sanders starts to take off and Hillary Clinton fades, can Bloomberg step into the breach and be the independent candidate that would, you know, attract Hillary Clinton voters and maybe peel off a few, blue city Republicans?
If he runs as an independent, I think he could do a lot of damage to the Democrats. You know, it's early enough still where he could decide to run as a Democrat. It would take him a lot of money, and he'd have to come up to speed in one heck of a hurry. But he's got the money. You know, he's worth around $35 billion. He's about, I believe it's about seven times wealthier than Donald Trump is, at least according to Forbes. Forbes' estimate of this stuff. And I've got to imagine that at least, you know, 1/35 of that is liquid, so he could probably get his hands on $1 billion in cash anytime he wants to.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say if he wanted to do it, the best time to do it would be to, like, right now, jump in the race, try to get qualified in the ballot for some of the Super Tuesday states. It doesn't have to be all of them, just a few of them, and test the waters. The only thing about that is if he decides to do that, it pretty much precludes him from running as an independent later on, because a lot of these states, almost every state, has some sort of sore loser law,
yeah,
which once you're on the ballot for a major party nomination, you can't then go back and run as an independent afterwards. And so you have to make a decision one way or the other. The window for a guy with as many resources as Michael Bloomberg has, the window is maybe not closed on a primary race within the Democratic Party. But if he ran as an independent, I think that would tend to hurt Democrats much more than Republicans. I think it's sort of the reverse of the Ross Perot run in 92. And Bloomberg might not be able to get an electoral vote, but he might be able to do enough damage to the Democrats to allow the Republican to win an overwhelming number of electoral college votes.
Talking again with Ed Morrissey, whose new book, despite what we've been talking about, is not called Going Blue. It is called a Going Red. And so let's talk about over on the Republican primary side here, heading into South Carolina, and then we have Nevada caucuses not long after that. There was a new poll out today, Donald Trump 36, Ted Cruz 20, Rubio 15, Bush 11, Carson 5, Kasich 9 in South Carolina. What are you looking for going into the South Carolina primaries right now, Ed?
Well, I mean, so far you're still in the proportional allocation of delegates stage. Mm-hmm. You don't get to winner-take-alls until March, until Super Tuesday. So technically anybody who scores in the first two or three slots are going to get enough delegates to justify their continued presence in the race. Everybody else, I think, after that pretty much has to get out. Jeb Bush might be the exception just because he's got so much money behind him, but if he's not scoring in the top three in any of these first three or four states, there's not much reason to keep going in this election. And I think that his super PAC is going to have to come to that conclusion pretty quickly. I think that you're going to have Donald Trump do very well in South Carolina, and I think the question then, looking at this, is going to be how well does Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz do? Because I really do think that that's the three people that are probably going to have the best time in South Carolina. I don't see John Kasich as a serious South Carolina voter type of guy. He's a good campaigner. You can't really count him out. But New Hampshire was really his. That was really in his wheelhouse. You know, an independent-minded electorate, one that appreciates sort of pragmatic governance, not an adherence to ideology. Then that's sort of John Kasich. That's the reason why John Huntsman, by the way, got 17% of the vote. It's about the same amount of the vote that Kasich got on Tuesday. John Huntsman got that in 2012. And so that's a New Hampshire sort of thing. I don't think it plays as well in South Carolina, even though I think Kasich has certainly got know, for instance, pro-life credibility is very high with John Kasich. I don't see him as being the kind of candidate that's going to go in there and inspire voters. Rubio, Cruz, yes, Trump, definitely. And we'll have to see how that plays out. One thing to look for, though, is that the primary for South Carolina is, I believe, on the 20th. Am I correct about that, or is that Nevada?
No, I think you're right. I think that is South Carolina.
It's a couple of weeks past the New Hampshire primary, basically, is what I'm saying. So there's more time for things to shift. And this was sort of the issue between Iowa and New Hampshire, which was that there was only a week between those two events. So whatever impact that Iowa had, it was going to probably be limited because there wasn't enough time necessary to move the electorate.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, now we're 3 weeks past Iowa, we're going to be 2 weeks past New Hampshire, and those eddies will play out in the South Carolina electorate.
Talking again with Ed Morrissey, and by the way, you were right and wrong, Ed, because in South Carolina, the Republican primary is February 20th, the Democratic primary is the 27th, the Nevada Democratic caucus is February the 20th, and the Republican caucus is February 23rd. So there you go. It gets
right.
Confusing for the next couple of
It does because
races.
they've got them switched around. They're not doing them at the same time. The two parties aren't doing them at the same time. The Nevada caucuses, I think, will be interesting because I think that Donald Trump won't compete as well in caucuses. That's organization. So I think you're looking at Rubio and Cruz in Nevada.
All right.
And Rubio's got some ties to Nevada, some family ties. He lived there for a short period of time as a teenager, I believe it was. And so might have a little bit more of an emotional connection to Rubio there. But it's going to come down to organization, who can actually get the people to the caucuses. And you know, we saw Ron Paul do very well in the Nevada caucuses before because of that. So I would say that if Trump's going to score a win, it'll be in South Carolina. I don't think he'll score a win in Nevada. I think you're looking at Rubio versus Cruz there.
Interesting. All right. Now, one more question before we let you go, or at least one more subject here. You've got a piece at Hot Air today on the new Ted Cruz ad, Damn It Feels Good to Be a Clinton, a almost shot-for-shot reboot of the destruction of the printer scene in Office Space. First of all, I've got to ask, it seems to me like the first high-profile ad from a Republican candidate that I can think of so far in the election cycle whose subject matter is Hillary Clinton, as opposed to going after another candidate. Are we now getting into the stage of the election where the Republican candidates, yes, they want to differentiate themselves from one another, but they also have to start trying to differentiate themselves from their Democratic opponents?
Yeah, I think you're right. I want to say that Trump did something that was sort of against Hillary Clinton, too, a few weeks ago. It might have just been a web ad for that. But I'm not sure it's the first, but it's certainly, you know, for those of us who love Office Space, certainly it's hilarious. but I think it's effective. It's a classic movie. It speaks to Gen Xers, I think, and even millennials. And I think it really sort of differentiates Ted Cruz in a way that I think is beneficial to him and to Republicans, which is sort of gives a sort of an emotional cultural connection to younger voters, where Republicans struggle often to make inroads. And I mean, this isn't the be all end all of that, but it shows that he's thinking about that he's taking that into consideration. And I think ridicule, in this sense, is a very effective weapon. He did it with Donald Trump as well. He did the Donald Trump is a fake Republican ad, and that was earlier in the week, where you had the kids playing with the Donald Trump doll, and you know, the woman showed him his house, and he said it was a lousy house, and so they smashed the house up, and were you know chanting eminent domain, eminent domain. I think that's effective against Donald Trump because I think ridicule kind of pokes a hole in the ego in a way that, you know, just talking about policy all by itself doesn't really seem to make a dent. And so I think the Cruz campaign is starting to get serious about attacking in all directions.
All right, Ed. Listen, I appreciate you coming on the program, sir. It is always a pleasure talking with you. Remind us again, when is the new book coming out?
The new book book is coming out. It's called Going Red. It is coming out on April 12th. You can go to goingredbook.com to find out more. We're going to be doing some updates on the website as events come up. And tomorrow I start recording the Audible version of Going Red. So you'll be able to pre-order the Audible version pretty quickly.
Nice. That is fantastic. Excellent. Ed, I appreciate you coming on the program. Sure, look forward to doing this again very soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. Have a great weekend. Ed Morris, he joins from Hot Air. We could use some hot air this weekend. It's cold here in the Northern Virginia area, and I saw the weather. It's going to be fantastic for the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, because tomorrow the high is supposed to be, let's see, on Saturday, a high of 16 in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So you might as well spend it inside, right? You're not going to be hanging out outdoors on a Saturday in Harrisburg. Sunday's high, by the way, just 22 in Harrisburg. I'm telling you, they've got the heat on at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex. It is warm and toasty inside. And I found this out on like day four because I finally made it over to where I could see this. There's a coat check. So you don't even have to walk around. You know how it kind of stinks sometimes in the winter. You get bundled up to deal with the cold and you get inside a warm building and then you don't want to carry your big coat around. You don't even have to do that at the Great American Outdoor Show. Check your coat. Wander around inside all day long. You never have to get outside in the elements until it's time for you to head back home. I'm telling you, it's going to be a fantastic weekend there in Harrisburg at the Great American Outdoor Show. Now, when we come back here on this edition of NRA News Cam and Company, Kimberly Corbin is going to join us talking about the Cosmo partnership with the Bloomberg Anti-Gun Group promoting gun control for single women. Stick around. We'll be right back with much more NRA News Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, right after this.
I'm here with my good friend Bruce Pyatt, competitive shooter. Bruce, okay, I have to do this interview and introduce you. So what do I say? Okay, here, look at this. Bruce, what haven't you done? NRA 2015 World Shooting Championship winner, five-time Bianchi Cup, NRA Action Pistol. I don't know. How do I introduce Bruce Pyatt?
Well, for 30 years I've been a police officer. I just retired, and the whole time I've been a competitive shooter. I started when I was a kid, and so I guess I'm...
You're Bruce Pyatt.
I guess.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Pyatt, what do I need to say? It's been quite a year for you and continues to be. We're going to talk a little bit about what you've done and what you have coming up. And first of all, let's step back. You said you're a police officer, just retired, and thank you for your service as a police officer. How did you get into competitive shooting from being a police officer?
Well, actually, I was a competitive shooter before being a police officer.
Okay, right? So how did that happen?
I started when I was a little kid, just shooting. I was bugging my dad to take me hunting. So what he did is signed me up for NRA small bore 50-foot at a local indoor range.
Good for him, because look what he did. He got you out of his hair, and look what he did for you.
Yeah. Well, I grew up right outside of New York City in New Jersey. There isn't a places to shoot, so I had to start indoors. And as soon as the junior program's done, men would come in and shoot bullseye pistol. Well, all the kids would go home, and I'd be standing there at the window watching the men, and I wanted to shoot pistol so bad. You know, let me get in there, and sure enough, some of the men would let me come in and fire a few shots. And
that's cool.
Well, as soon as I could get my hands on a pistol, I was doing it. We had some family heirlooms, you know, from my grandfather. My grandfather had a bunch of guns. He was actually an active shooter. So as soon as I could get my hands on pistols, I was doing it.
And look at Bruce, how natural the mentoring process is. Even these are guys who weren't, or you know, their guys are in there shooting. They saw you had interest, they took you in and showed you how to do it, and dude, they lit that fire. That is so great. All right, so the 2015 NRA World Shooting Championship winner. That was an interesting competition. That was something new, right?
It was. this is the second year they had it. It's a very interesting format that they supply all the guns, they supply all the ammo, and it's 12 or 13 different disciplines. We shot everything from cowboy action to precision 22 rimfire, all the way up to long range.
So it really
was power, everything.
And nothing against three gun, Bruce, but unlike three gun, this really was just the gamut of disciplines.
Every discipline, bullseye, handgun, everything. Yeah. You couldn't be good at one thing and win there. You had to be good at everything. We had aerial shotgun, you know, trap ski, everything.
I'll tell you, and I was talking to some of the competitors out there, and they had to keep the right attitude because there's some competitors who are really, really good at doing certain things, and they came in and it's like, I can't do this very well, but if you let yourself kind of get, you know, get caught up in that, it's going to tear you down at a thing like that.
That's exactly true. The guys that were good at IPSC or whatever their specialty was, they would push hard at that specialty and thinking that's going to help them along in the whole competition.
Right.
And that really is not the case. You had to be steady and stable the whole way
right.
through. You couldn't
and
crash anything.
And stay with it. Speaking of Bruce Pyatt, all right, Bruce. So, okay, moving on, 2016. What you got a lot coming up. Once again, here's the schedule of stuff. And this is just a sampling, ladies and gentlemen, what's coming up for Bruce Pyatt.
There's more.
There's more. What are you looking forward to the most?
Actually, shooting-wise, in November, the World Bianchi Cup match is down in New Zealand.
Oh, nice.
Shooting is shooting. I like shooting anything. But to go down to New Zealand, it's a beautiful place. I've been there twice.
Would you like me to come and cover it for NRA News Camera Company?
I got a bag. You can carry my bag.
There you go. Boys, we're going to New Zealand. I always wanted to go to New Zealand.
Take the whole crew.
I'm going to say Bruce Pyatt told me to come to New Zealand. All right. So that comes, that kind of stuff like that keeps the fire going, I imagine. Keeps you into it, interested.
Yeah. I've been very fortunate my whole career. You know, police paid my bills. And my sponsors have basically paid for my hobby.
Mention a few of those sponsors.
Caspian Arms, I've been with them my whole shooting career. 29 years I've been with them.
Wow.
Sierra Bullets, Starline Brass, almost the same time. DPMS, Panther Arms.
Cool.
Burris Optics and H&M Black Nitride just came out with them. So
beautiful. All right, before we run out of time, how can we get more information about Bruce Pyatt?
My website, brucepyatt.com.
BrucePyatt.com. Bruce Pyatt, what a guy. You're a great guy, and you're a great mentor. We love what you do, and we love having you here on NRA News.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. Coming up next hour, headed to Harrisburg, the Great American Outdoor Show. Cameron Gray talking with Michael Waddell, the bone collector, also a Mary Callison of 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control. Join us next hour. She's going to be speaking at the Cabela's in Dundee, Michigan on a Second Amendment women's panel. It is an NRA weekend at Cabela's coming up Saturday and Sunday all across the country. So make sure you get a chance to head to Cabela's and celebrate a Second Amendment weekend. Right now, I want to welcome to the program our friend Kimberly Corbin once again. Kimberly, how are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I am good. I appreciate you coming on the program. So yesterday I was alerted to the fact that Cosmopolitan magazine has apparently teamed up with, I think it's Everytown for Gun Safety, on a an anti-gun special. It's called Singled Out. It's in their March issue, warning single women about dating someone who might be a gun owner and warning women against becoming a gun owner themselves. Have you had a chance to check any of this out online?
I was actually just my attention drawn to it yesterday. I have to say I was very disappointed.
Okay, so why were you disappointed, Kimberly?
So for those listening that don't know my backstory, I was a sex assault victim in 2006 when a stranger broke into my college area apartment. I managed to survive and reported that attack, but a lot of women don't. One of the tacks that I took with the man that broke into my apartment was actually talking to him and befriending him, basically making him think that I wasn't going to say anything and that everybody makes mistakes, and therefore he let me go. What most people don't know is that I read that that similar scenario in Cosmopolitan magazine a few months beforehand about a woman who was abducted out of her work parking lot. The man had taken her out into a wooded area or something like that, but she basically convinced him that they were going to date, and he let her go. And so that's where I had gotten that information to try the same thing. So I choose to protect myself with a firearm, and even though I don't tell every single woman that she should arm herself too, I mean, don't take away my right to choose to do so. Now we have Cosmo, the article or the magazine that used to empower women, coming back and saying, well, you know, you need to basically be a victim yourself by not choosing to either educate yourself or to do the steps necessary to make sure that if you want a firearm that you can protect yourself.
I don't suppose anybody from Cosmo reached out to you at all.
Not on this issue. Actually, just following speaking to President Obama at his town hall, I had reached out to Cosmo about talking to them a little bit more about educating women, somewhat of you know, my stance and then what the magazine had done for me previously. And I am very hesitant to do that now, since they're taking this broad stance that they're saying, you know, I'd say pandering is the nicest way that I can put it, but asking them to go through their the men's drawers and not look for what's in their boxers, but the drawer instead, that's incredibly, incredibly demeaning. How about instead of asking what's in their drawers, let's ask, you know, more about mental health. Hey, have you ever raped a woman? Have you ever domestically violenced somebody? Or those kinds of questions. It's not the firearm that should be the issue.
Talking again with Kimberly Corbin. And so one of the aspects of this piece singled out, they have Meet the Gunsplainers.
Yes.
And Kimberly, I'm apparently a gunsplainer.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. I had no idea. So the quote that they use for me, and I was actually responding to a op-ed in the Daily Tar Heel newspaper that objected to the idea of campus carry because the author said, among other things, this would campus carry would further burden the victim of a sexual assault with their own defense. Right? It would place a further burden on the individual who is the crime victim. To defend themselves. And so what I said was, if you're the victim of a violent crime, the burden of stopping that assault, the burden, that unwanted job, right, the thing you don't want but that you are tasked now with doing, the burden of stopping that assault is not going to be on the person committing that assault, not at that moment in time. The burden of stopping that assault is on the victim. And, again, that's not a welcome thing. That's not victim blaming or victim shaming, but it is acknowledging that you cannot expect your attacker to be stricken with all of a sudden a case of the conscience, right?
Right.
You cannot depend on the police to arrive in the nick of time to save you from whatever crime is about to be committed.
Right.
If there is an opportunity to stop that crime, it is likely going to come from the victim. And again, there's no guarantee that you as a crime victim will be able to stop or prevent that attack, even if you have a firearm.
Right.
But it still is going to, that impetus is going to come from you, right?
Well, and the unfortunate portion of this is that burden is placed on us as victims, not to defend ourselves, but we have to survive and endure that assault in whatever capacity it's happening. We have that burden regardless. Shouldn't you want the option, if you are able, to be able to defend yourself? I took that because I'm looking at the gunsplaining part. Nice picture, by the way, next to that cam. But I took that as, yes, I if I'm already burdened with being assaulted, there's nobody that's going to be able to help me. My cell phone was within reach the entire 2 hours that I was assaulted, and nobody could have helped myself at that point but me.
You know, and Kim, I know I've told you this before, but I really cannot thank you enough for speaking up. And speaking out because, you know, look, Cosmo, if they really wanted to provide a both sides of this story, A, they wouldn't have partnered with Everytown for gun safety.
No. It needs to be somebody that's right in the middle of the ground. Let women and their readership make up these opinions and decide for themselves. Don't tell them what to think. We're smarter than that.
Absolutely. And when you've got the flow chart of here's what to say, and here's how to say it, and let's present these straw man arguments, and here's your response. When you're telling people what to say rather than, you know, as you say, what Cosmo did for you, which was empowered you to survive that assault.
Right.
Yeah, I can see why you'd be disappointed.
Give me actual solid things to work with. Don't just tell me to ask a new boyfriend what's in his drawers. That is demeaning, and it just makes me feel like they're really creating this stigma towards guns and not towards the actual issue at hand here, which is, guess what? It's scary in the dating world, and it is scary getting to know someone, and you don't always know what you're going to get. Do your due diligence and find out, but that firearm has nothing to do with whether or not that person is going to commit a crime.
Talking again with Kimberly Corbin. Kimberly, thank you again for coming on the program. I hope we get a chance to do this again soon.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Cam. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. We'll talk again. Kimberly Corbin with us here on NRA News, Cam and Company. Still to come on NRA News, Cam and Company, we're heading up to Harrisburg. Cameron Gray talking with Michael Waddell, the Bone Collector, Mary Callis, and 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control. He's going to be speaking on a Second Amendment women's panel at the Cabela's in Dundee, Michigan. And, you know, it has been a while since we've looked at the campus crime reports around the country. But there are still crimes occurring. As a matter of fact, suspect, let's see, in an armed robbery near the health science campus. This is from the Red and Black student newspaper in Athens, Georgia. Armed robbery with shots fired. It was at the Park Place Apartments just off campus, but right near the University of Georgia Medical Campus. Robbery reported at the Cornell campus. Let's see. A man shot and robbed near a, oh, this is near a Dallas middle school, not on a college campus. It does happen. These campuses are not crime-free. Georgia State, I'm not sure if the student library is actually reopened yet after it was closed because of the number of armed robberies that had occurred there. But these gun-free zones, these locations in which the lawful carrying of firearms is not permitted. These are not crime-free locations. We know this. All right. We're also, I mentioned we're keeping our eye on other Second Amendment news and information for you. In fact, I had a campus carry update out of the state of Kansas. There was an attempt in the Kansas State Senate to push back the start date for campus carry. Push it back, I believe, 4 years, as a matter of fact. Now, the campus carry law is scheduled to go into effect in 2017 in the state of Kansas. This amendment that would have pushed it back 4 years failed. There was also a another amendment that would have moved up the enactment of a campus carry in the state of Kansas. That also failed. So 2017 remains the target date for campus carry to be enacted there in the state of Kansas. The amendment to push back the measure offered by Senator Longbine, he wanted to stress, Senator Jeff Longbine, he said that the proposal would not repeal it, just delay its implementation. He said students and staff of colleges have not gained the needed trust with concealed carry. He said, I don't think we have that comfort level. To that end, there's a story out of the state of Texas today, on the advent of open carry. Again, there was a lot of people uncomfortable with the idea of open carry in the state of Texas, particularly a lot of anti-gun activists who tried to make it seem like the sky was about to fall and there were going to be shootouts over parking spaces and stuff like that. Fox has a story. Open carry in Texas began not with a bang, but with a whimper. Predictions that the law would cause panic or even put the public in danger have so far proven to be off target. Corporal Tracy Knight of the Fort Worth Police Department telling the Star-Telegram, we do not have anything interesting to report. Two calls so far. Fort Worth, by the way, pretty big city, Fort Worth. Two calls so far. No issues. We have no concerns, she said. And we have had no problems. The sheriff of Tarrant County, Dee Anderson, told the Star-Telegram newspaper, said, I said before this became law that I thought it was going to be much ado about nothing, but I didn't know it was going to be this much nothing. So the Tarrant County sheriff said this wasn't going to be a big deal, but it's even less of a deal than I thought it would be. Bastrop County, Texas, anticipated there'd be a flood of 911 calls opening weekend that open carry was allowed by law. They didn't get a single call. Fox says the executive director of the Texas Police Chiefs Association says that they still have concerns, but so far those concerns have not manifested themselves with any actual problems there in the Lone Star State of Texas. Now, in addition to taking you back to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, for the Great American Outdoor Show next hour, and talking with Mary Callison about the NRA weekend happening at Cabela's around the country and what she's going to be doing up there in Dundee, Michigan. When we come back, we're going to talk about a what is being described as a possible lone wolf terror attack in Columbus, Ohio, where restaurant goers were attacked last night by a man with a machete. This, while authorities are releasing information on an ISIS supporter who was looking to target a church in Michigan, specifically looking for a gun-free zone. Those stories all coming up after the break, so stick around. Hour 2 of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. It's coming up right after this. Quick timeout.
Jonathan Rockin with the Shooting Club. Jonathan, welcome to NRA News. How are you?
Great. I'm fantastic. Good to be here.
Well, you got a cool product. We were talking a little bit the other day, and I had to grab you guys over to talk about it. Tell me what is, and tell everyone else, what is the Shooting Club?
The Shooting Club is the world's first smartphone app that connects shooters across the country in competition for cash and prizes while promoting gun safety. We found that accidents happen with guns because people aren't proficient with them. They sit in a drawer. They don't know how to use them. Maybe you've been to a shooting range once or twice, but if you're rusty, it doesn't really matter. So we found that if we can find a way to reward people and make it fun and give away money, then people will take it a little bit more seriously. So we have a proprietary handicapping system which allows shooters who are very new beginners all the way up to retired cops and military to compete against one another on a fair playing field.
Dude, what a great concept. So, all right, so I got a lot of questions for you here. How before we go to how does it work, how did it go from this, hey, I got this great idea, to something that you're just getting ready to launch now in the App Store?
The whole idea started two Thanksgivings ago. My dad and I were talking. I was visiting him out in Houston, Texas, and he had commented he just got a new handgun, and his brother, who lives in Louisiana, had gotten one also. And they were trash-talking a little bit about who's a better shot. And he said, wouldn't it be cool if there was a website where we could upload pictures of our targets and see who was a better shot? My regular business and my background is in web development and design, and I said, you know what, that's a really good idea. We looked and we looked, and there was nothing like that out there. So we decided to build it ourselves. Two years later, here we are.
Wow, that is so cool. All right, so it's called the Shooting Club. How does it work?
So you download the free app from the iPhone store or from the Google Play store.
Got it.
And you find a local range using GPS on your phone if you've never been to a range. At the local range, you purchase one of our official competition targets. You scan the QR code, and then you take the target, which is very, very unique and fun, which is really the secret sauce of what we do. It's really four targets in one. You shoot it according to the rules. You use the app itself, which uses your native camera to take a picture, scores it, handicaps you, and uploads it into your activity feed so all your friends and followers and fellow gun lovers can see your scores.
That is so awesome. What a great idea.
You can even form private groups that are just for maybe a couple of buddies that are for your own private competitions as well.
And I'll tell you what, Jonathan, we're always talking about here on NRA News, how important it is to keep the shooting sports and hunting and everything related to that, the Second Amendment and everything related, keep it vibrant, keep it growing, keep it relevant. And what a great way to do this, to actually be able to merge. Because the biggest thing is, people get so caught up in technology they actually don't go out and shoot anymore. But this merges technology with going out and shooting.
And it makes it social. We found that if you have a buddy that lives in another state and you both love to shoot, but you never have a chance to go together to a range and make it a social activity, now we've removed the geographic and the time borders to do that.
Big.
As you follow people, you can post your stuff to Facebook. You can form your own private groups, upload pictures. Hey, I just got a brand new 9mm. I can't wait to try it out, etc. And what we found is this is bringing in some of the growing interest groups, such as women and millennials, who are newer to shooting sports, and it gives them a platform to really take it and run
All
with
right.
it.
Before we run out of time, how do we get more information about the Shooting
Club? You
can
go to theshootingclub.com or look for the app, The Shooting Club, in your app store.
Jonathan Rocket, The Shooting Club, thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for being on NRA News.
You bet. It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Welcome back. Hour two of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, starts right now. Michael Waddell, the bone collector. Love him. Watch him on Outdoor Channel. You're going to be able to take a look at him right here and take a listen in just a little bit. Also, Mary Callison from 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control. She is not going to be at the Great American Outdoor Show this weekend in Harrisburg, unfortunately, but she will be at Cabela's in Dundee, Michigan. And it is an NRA weekend at Cabela's all around the country. Every store going to have various events. There in Dundee, Michigan, they've got a Second Amendment women's panel that Mary is going to be taking part in. And we'll talk with Mary about that coming up a little bit later on in the hour. In West Virginia, permitless carry, you know, it is passed out of the House, House Bill 4145. It is likely to get its first hearing on the Senate side as early as next Monday. Senate Judiciary Committee has scheduled a hearing for House Bill 4145 for Monday, February 15th. And hopefully the weather will cooperate and the hearing can go off as scheduled. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin there in West Virginia vetoed the permitless carry bill when it got to his desk last year, even though the bill did have a veto-proof majority in both the House and the Senate. Governor Tomlin vetoed the bill after the session had expired, and so the lawmakers are back at it again this year in West Virginia. And this year, they are moving very quickly on the bill as well. We are still relatively early on in the West Virginia session, and it looks like there haven't been any roadblocks to date for House Bill 4145. So the idea is that they can get this bill to Governor Tomlin's desk. Even if he vetoes the bill, as he has said that he will, lawmakers would still have time to try to override the governor's veto. Again, 4145 passing out of the House of Delegates last week with a 68-31 vote, a bipartisan vote, by the way. Now, I mentioned last hour that I want to talk about an attack in Columbus, Ohio, a 10 TV in Columbus, reporting that a man went into a restaurant, the Nazareth Mediterranean Cuisine restaurant last night in Columbus, armed with a machete and began attacking patrons. Four people transported to the hospital there in the restaurant, one of them critically injured. The victims in this case were able to get a video of the suspect's car and a partial license plate. So police, using that information, identified the suspect's vehicle a short distance away. They gave chase. Suspect took off. He ended up spinning out at one point. When he got out of his car, he was armed both with a machete and a knife, lunged at officers, at which point the suspect was shot and killed. There were questions last night as to whether or not the attacker was on the terror watch list. We have no reason or no knowledge that the individual was on the terror watch list. But CBS News did report that law enforcement authorities are concerned that this has the hallmarks of a quote-unquote lone wolf terrorist attack. According to
Homeland Security correspondent Jeff Peggs with CBS News. The attacker has a Somali background. Authorities believe he may have traveled to Dubai in the United Arab Emirates in 2012. CBS News also said police said employees and patrons tried to get the man to stop. Sergeant Rich Wiener with the Columbus Police Department said some of the patrons there started throwing chairs at him, just trying to get him out of there. Fighting back however they could, because self-defense is a human right. And those customers there in Columbus were exercising their right of self-defense, even if it was not with a firearm, if it was with the tool that they had available to them. But they were still fighting back. And meanwhile, there was a possible attack that was thwarted by an FBI terrorism investigation in the state of Michigan. FBI filed a criminal complaint about an individual that they say, this individual, Khalil Abu Rayyan, who was interested in committing an act of terror in a church on behalf, quote, of the foreign terrorist organization Islamic State of Iraq in Levant. The suspect told an undercover asset, according to the FBI, quote, I tried to shoot up a church one day. I don't know the name of it, but it's close to my job. It's one of the biggest ones in Detroit. He said, yeah, I had it planned out. It's easy, and a lot of people go there. Plus, people are not allowed to carry guns in church. Again, noting that there would be defenseless victims as part of what he was looking for in a soft target. Now, in Michigan, the concealed carry law does ban concealed carry, quote, on any property or facility owned or operated by a church, synagogue, mosque, temple, or other place of worship, unless, and this is a big unless the presiding official or officials of the church, synagogue, mosque, temple, or other place of worship permit the carrying of concealed pistol on that property or facility. In other words, you can opt in as a pastor. You can opt in as a rabbi. You can opt in as an imam and say, well, we want people to be able to carry here. And in fact, we know that there are pastors in the state of Michigan who do welcome concealed carry holders as attendees in church, some cases volunteer security guards. There have been stories, armed citizen stories, we've covered over the past few years in the state of Michigan, in which pastors have actually had to defend themselves in their churches from attackers. In one case, I believe it was during a church service. In one case, it was a pastor who had gone back to the church to do some work and was attacked there while he was alone in the church. So, again, while there is a de facto opt-out, firearms lawfully carried are still banned from these religious institutions, it is possible in the state of Michigan for pastors to opt in. Maybe next week here on NRA News Cam and Company, we'll talk with our friend Rick Echter of Rick's Firearm Academy in Detroit. I'm fairly sure that Rick, who has, you know, been a firearms instructor there in the Detroit area for quite some time, I have a feeling that he has probably trained a pastor or two or three or maybe a dozen there in the state of Michigan. Now, we are also looking at legislative news, not just with Kansas and campus carry, West Virginia with permitless carry, but we are looking in Missouri as well. at a House vote, a resolution passed by the State House of Representatives there in Missouri, not the U.S. House, not the congressional delegation. But this resolution passed by the Missouri State House is actually directed towards the U.S. Congress, asking them to reject President Barack Obama's executive actions on firearms. The Springfield News Leader said the measure sponsored by Representative Jared Taylor. He says, quote, this is an overreach by the president again. The House voted 118 to 39 to approve the measure. Now, here's the deal. There are not 118 Republicans in the Missouri House of Representatives. This was a bipartisan vote here. And in fact, the paper in Springfield, the News Leader, quoted Representative Stacey Newman, Democrat from St. Louis, a strong advocate for gun control laws, they say, who said that the president's executive actions weren't very meaningful anyway. Quote, she said, what these executive actions do is very little. So you may have had some pro-gun Democrats. You may also have had some anti-gun Democrats, perhaps, who were not too happy with this. All right, the vote 118 to 39. The makeup of the Missouri House is, I believe, 117 to 45. So I was wrong. 117 Republicans, 45 Democrats. So you had at least one crossover. But I didn't realize that the margin was that large there in the Missouri House, 117 to 45. And again, the vote by the Missouri House, 118 to 39 in the state of Missouri. Now, President Obama has included a request for additional money in his budget proposal, topping $4 trillion, by the way. That's the budget proposal. $4 trillion. It does include more money for the hiring of ATF officers and things of that nature. What is not known is, well, actually, I think it is known that the House is unlikely to accept the president's budget number. Speaker Ryan has made that pretty clear. So the what is unclear is what the final numbers passed by the House will actually look like. Now, the state of Tennessee, legislation that would allow the lawful carrying of firearms inside the legislative office complex is making progress. Republican speakers in the state House and state Senate are in favor of the change. Senate Speaker Ron Ramsey, House Speaker Beth Harwell, wanted to change the policy as early as the start of the year, according to the Associated Press. But the Tennessee Highway Patrol, which operates security in and around the Capitol, asked for time to study how it would have to revise its protocols before putting the change into effect. Speaker Ron Ramsey says it's not going to be a problem. Says it is a proven statistic, undisputable, that if gun permit holders are allowed into a facility, it is safer, not less safe. The governor of Tennessee says it's not clear that that lawmakers have the authority to change the gun policies there at the state-owned legislative plaza, because they're tenants there of the legislative plaza. AP says legislative officials disagree, saying that they do have the power to decide rules for their offices and committee rooms. Governor says that he is willing to discuss the matter. He says that's their work environment. If they decide they want to do that, I'm willing to have that conversation. The AP says in Tennessee, Democrats pounced on the proposed change in Tennessee. And this is fascinating, because a lot of times when you see a campus, not even a campus carry, but a concealed carry bill introduced or a reform measure introduced in the state legislature, if concealed carry is not allowed in the Capitol complex or in legislative offices or things like that, that's one of the arguments that gun control advocates will use, right? Oh, so you want guns everywhere but here. So what happens when you actually have lawmakers just say, yeah, we want people to be able to exercise their right to carry here too? Then you get statements like, quote, introducing loaded weapons to a crowded space like this poses an unnecessary risk. That seems to be generally opposed to concealed carry, like anywhere, right? And again, we know that concealed carry holders aren't a problem in other spaces as crowded or perhaps even more crowded than the legislative plaza. AP also quotes Beth Joslyn Roth, executive director of the Safe Tennessee Project, who also spoke out against the change, saying, quote, contrary to the myths that we hear at Legislative Plaza, allowing more guns where they were previously prohibited will only increase the likelihood of unintentional shootings. So, in other words, we don't want to expand concealed carry anywhere. In fact, we want to restrict concealed carry everywhere, right? Here's the thing, though. Is it true when she says allowing more guns where they were previously prohibited will only increase the likelihood of unintentional shootings? Because, you know, we had in the state of Virginia, our last sort of expansion of right to carry was 2009? It was 2011. Restaurant carry. And now Virginians could carry in restaurants and establishments in which alcohol was served. Now, if you were carrying, you could not consume alcohol. But we still heard the same, really virtually the same arguments, with the exception we also heard people are going to get drunk and shoot up bars and restaurants. But what actually happened? There was no increase in unintentional shootings. As it turns out, there was a slight decrease in restaurant robberies. But there were no problems, and there have been no problems since restaurant carry became the law of the land. It was July 1st, 2010 when it began. And the Richmond Times-Dispatch, August of 2011, with a story, gun crimes drop at Virginia bars and restaurants. They said Virginia's bars and restaurants did not turn into shooting galleries as the a law allowing concealed carry holders to carry in restaurants where alcohol was served went into effect. A year later, there were fewer problems in Virginia restaurants than there were when the ban was in place. So we'll keep our eyes on what's going on in Tennessee there with the lawmakers who would like to extend right to carry to the legislative plaza. All right, when we come back here on NRA News, Cam and Company, Michael Waddell, the bone collector, talking with Cameron Gray from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Stick around. We'll be back with more right after this.
Speaking with Jose Morales, NRA training counselor. Jose, welcome to NRA News. We want to talk about the three rules of firearm safety. What are those?
Thank you very much for having me. The three NRA safety rules. The first one, the primary rule, is always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Now, what that means is we want to make sure that if that gun discharges by accident, that it's in the safest direction possible, the direction it will cause if the gun were to discharge, the least amount of property damage, the least amount of possibility of injury possible. It's our responsibility to make sure that we never point the muzzle, which is the front of the barrel, at anything we don't want to shoot, including ourselves.
Okay. Rule number two.
Rule number two is always keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to fire, which is common sense, but as my mother says all the time, common sense is not that common. We need to make sure that our finger in my pretend gun is on the side of the gun, away from the trigger guard at all times. And our finger only enters the trigger guard when we're ready to shoot, and as soon as we're done, it's removed immediately and always kept alongside of the gun, preferably on the frame.
Okay. And what's rule number three?
Rule number three, always keep your firearms unloaded until you're ready to use them. So the moment you pick up a firearm, you have to make sure that if they have any manual safeties, they're engaged. Open up the action, remove the magazine, visually and physically inspect to make sure that there's no rounds in the chamber, and then you are ensured that the gun is empty.
Jose Morales, NRA training counselor, let's go over those three rules again. Number one.
Absolutely. Always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction. Number two is always keep your finger off of the trigger until you're ready to shoot. And number three is always keep the gun unloaded until you're ready to use it.
All right, the three rules of firearm safety. How can we get some more information about this?
Just check on NRAinstructors.org for a comprehensive list of classes, and we'd love to see people take more of them.
Jose, why is it important that we observe these three rules of gun safety?
As I tell my students and gun enthusiasts and budding gun enthusiasts, guns are incredibly safe. We are the ones that are unsafe. We are the ones that make accidents happen. And if you follow all three safety rules all the time, not when you remember, not when you feel like it, but all the time, it is literally impossible to have an accident.
Speaking with Marianne Johnson with the NRA Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program. Marianne, welcome back to NRA News. Tell folks, what is the NRA Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program?
So the Eddie Eagle Gun Safe Program is a firearm accident prevention education program for pre-K to fourth grade. It's all centered around Eddie's message, if you see a gun, stop, don't touch, run away, tell a grown-up.
Why does NRA do this?
We do it as a way to keep kids safe, get kids thinking about guns. We understand that 47% of American households have firearms in them, so kids need to know what to do when they see them.
It kind of follows along with the NRA's bedrock message of gun safety and how important it is.
Absolutely, and that's why we do what we can and try to prevent as many accidents as possible.
And how does the NRA do it? How does the program work?
So the program, we work mostly with schools, law enforcement, libraries, healthcare providers, and daycares. We provide them with all of the materials that they need to run the program, including instructor guides, animated DVD, workbooks, stickers, and parents' guides for the kids to take home. So it's very easy to use, very accessible, and we're also able to offer all the material for free thanks to grant funding from the Friends of the NRA.
And there's that cool costume you might be able to get to bring to your school, right?
Absolutely, yes. We do have the mascot costume, which we're currently in the process of updating to go along with our new look that we have. And law enforcement agencies across the country all have costumes and add a whole new element to the presentation. We have a brand new website just for kids. It's eddieeagle.com. It has the video on it, has the Eddie Eagle challenge that kids can take, as well as coloring pages and some sing-along songs as well.
And Marianne, how do people get more information about the program?
The best way is either you can look us up online, eddieeagle.nra.org, or you can send us an email at eddie@nrahq.org.
Marianne Johnson, thanks for what you do, and thanks for being on NRA News.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company. Looking in at the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. A pretty good crowd there on a Friday afternoon. I think it's going to be a little bit more crowded on Saturday and Sunday, the last 2 days of the Great American Outdoor Show. But don't let that stop you, honestly. The aisles are wide. There's plenty of space to sit down. I can let you know where the good food trucks are located inside the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex, because I have discovered them. So make sure you head out if you've got the opportunity. It's an easy drive from everywhere from, you know, Northern Virginia all the way into New York State. We've seen a lot of folks from Massachusetts and New Jersey, Ohio, obviously Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and elsewhere. So hope that we do get a chance to see you there at the Great American Outdoor Show. Now, Cameron Gray, I had the opportunity not only to speak with Stone Cold Steve Austin this week, which is pretty cool, but he also had the opportunity to spend some time with Michael Waddell, the bone collector, host of Michael Waddell's Bone Collector and Realtree Road Trips with Michael Waddell on the Outdoor Channel. Let's head to Harrisburg, take a look and a listen.
Here at the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It's Michael Waddell, of course. Needs no introduction. But, Michael, you have so much going on. I actually had to have a cheat sheet here. There's so much so much stuff associated with you. So Michael Waddell's Bone Collector, of course. Real Tree Road Trips with Michael Waddell. We're talking about the Outdoor Channel shows. I just saw you were speaking over there at the booth. I walked by so fast. Which car company are you representing as well?
Chevrolet. Yeah. Only the finest. Chevrolet trucks.
Yeah, Chevy trucks. I mean, you got Night and Hail. I mean, seriously, I don't know why you don't walk around in a race NASCAR track suit. It's unreal. What's your hat say? Oh, a Bone Collector hat. That's okay.
Campaign.
You got off the top of your head, how many sponsors do you have?
I don't know. What does it take, 10 or 12 to just make a TV show possible, obviously? But the biggest thing, Cameron, I was nervous. I was looking at your cheat sheet here on these TV shows I was hosting. I even said, thank God that it didn't say, like, you know, guest star on Cops. Running fast, didn't really get a good focus on him. So
uninvited guest star.
Uninvited, Michael Waddell.
Michael, talk about, you know, for people who don't know, you know, people, of course, in this show know you and know what you do. But what does Bone Collector mean? Talk about just the concept of what bone collecting is.
Bone Collector is real simple. Obviously, you know, with anything in a logo or a title, you got to have something that kind of catches people's attention. And Bone Collector was something we felt did. But the foundation of Bone Collector is just really no holes barred, no excuses for being a hunter. It doesn't mean that we're trying to be tough or macho. It's just simply we hunt, we love it. You know, we all grew up hunting and fishing, and we make no excuses for it, and we just love it, the whole camp experience, the culture of it. And really, our show, we wanted our brand to kind of speak loud when it come to being very proud of being a hunter, not making any excuses for having a chance to hunt God's renewable resource. That was the biggest thing that we want to set forth. And then if we had a chance to develop and help manufacture products, we wanted to try to develop and do some things that was special, that helped you in the field. But the biggest thing we want to do is just have fun. I mean, hunting's fun to us. And so it's not a contest or trying to see who can kill the biggest. It's just about having a good time.
You know, hunting's fun, of course. You know, we talk about once a year. I get to see you at these shows. It's always good to see you, of course. For some reason, you never call back when I call you off shows. But that's all right. That's another story. Can we talk about guys like Ricky Gervais and people who are so vocally anti-hunting, and they take some of these stories that have made national news because, you know, the media is, of course, not a fan of hunting. And a guy like Ricky Gervais, you know, to his credit, he's got a huge platform and a huge voice because he's a popular person. But he a lot of people listen to what he says, and he affects the thoughts of many people. So when you see a Ricky Gervais just going after hunting like you wouldn't believe, how do you respond to stuff like that?
It's frustrating because you're exactly right. Somebody like Ricky Gervais has got so many followers and he's such a voice, and so many times just these ignorant stuff I couldn't say on TV or even on this show or anywhere is what they say and how they represent it is so off base, and it's complete ignorance. And so really I think we're in a time now to where in the world of politically correct, it's only politically correct if it's really common sense logic on anything. And hunting is one of the most common sense logic. Second Amendment, one of the most common sense logic things we have that the good Lord gave us first, and our forefathers wrote it into a constitution. And obviously the opportunity to hunt and fish and hunt God's renewable resource, there's nothing that anybody should even be controversial about it. The right to defend yourself. However, it's getting crazy that somebody like me or you who enjoy shooting a firearm and or have an opportunity to go hunt for table fare, whether it be a squirrel, rabbit, turkey, moose, you name it, if you have a chance to hunt it and it's God's renewable resource, it is there for subsistence for our family in case we need it, that emergency plan. And it's gotten so crazy that we are politically incorrect at times for being a hunter, for being simple people who enjoy hunting. And so the biggest thing, sometimes our industry, sometimes the personalities in our industry, we don't speak up. I would love to go one-on-one with Ricky Gervais and have a chance to talk to him. You know, when everything fired up about that Cecil the Lion deal and the hunter, I was one of the first personalities to jump in there and say something, because a lot of times we're so afraid of a backlash from PETA. In the meantime, he's got millions of followers. We've been blessed to have hundreds of thousands and millions of followers when you accumulate everything we got going. NRA is our biggest advocate when it comes to fighting these things, all the way to the steps of Washington, D.C., but we got to speak up. We've got to do more. And if you combine every personality out there, maybe it is us. Maybe it is a Ted Nugent. It's a Lee and Tiffany. It's just a Jim Shockey's, the Eva Shockey's. When we all say something at once, we can equal one Ricky Gervais. But what happens, we sit back because we're afraid. We don't want Ricky Gervais on us. And so, no, I want him on me. I'd like to talk to him head to head, and I'd like to go, you know, just intellectually and talk to him about what hunting is about. He don't know it. I feel sorry for him in one regard because he don't understand it. And when times get hard, he's probably going to crawl up in some red fern tree and probably smoke some wacky weed and try to protect it. And I'm going to be sitting at the bottom, you and I, and we're going to be hunting down some vittles because times have gotten hard. So he don't understand the true, the way the good Lord put it here for us to live and what could happen if he wasn't living in Hollywood or wherever he is, where he had people to protect him. Number one, they all got bodyguards. And number two, they order from room service. You know, I grew up in a place to where I ate a lot of squirrels and rabbits. Wasn't every time because I wanted to. It's just because we didn't get to go to Bonanza every Friday night and eat the buffet. That was once a month, maybe. My dad took us into town to Columbus, Georgia, and we spent money and got soft-serve ice cream all you could eat. The rest of the time, Tuesday night, like, well, we got these squirrels. We're going to eat them because we wanted to save some money. Our family knew what a gallon of milk cost. You know what I'm saying? We went to the pump, and we might put $5 in the tank because we didn't have money to fill it up that week. So a lot of these people are just completely in their own bubble, and they are ignorant to the fact the way a lot of us Americans live and to the true fabric of American culture, and it just really aggravates me. But we got to speak up. We got to fight hard, and that's what NRA has done. We make a loud voice. And was done town hall meeting? Was anybody talking about me or anybody talking about even a Jim Shockey or anything like that? But I can tell you what Obama was worried about. He tried to get NRA to talk to him, which it made no sense for NRA to be there. So what do we got to do to be right on the front lines to fight against PETA? And our argument and the common sense of what hunting's about, we win every time. Every time. Because if you get hungry and there's not a grocery store, if you get hungry, there's not McDonald's Golden Arches, what do? You better know how to handle a firearm or a bow and arrow and know how to skin a squirrel, a rabbit, a deer, a moose, so on and so forth. But people like Ricky Gervais just completely ignorant to what this country is about, in my opinion.
So it's interesting, too. You're also seeing now, you know, most people on the left, some, you know, people on the right, conservative too. Do you think eating organic, farm to table? So you're seeing an interesting movement to where some people you wouldn't traditionally think of are now saying, if I'm really going to be true to eating organic, eating correctly, and eating, you know, eating sustainably, I'm going to have to learn to hunt. And you know, farm to table is sometimes becoming field to table. So it's kind of an interesting dichotomy, because you always associate that kind of eating and lifestyle to the left, but that's becoming something that's become more prevalent.
It's exactly right, and I love this organic green movement. I love that, because if you think about it, country boys and girls were green way before it's cool. I mean, we always waited for the fresh tomatoes to come off the vine and some white bread, mayonnaise, salt, and pepper, and that was a tomato sandwich, and that was like you could get a date in Georgia if you had the best tomatoes, you know what I'm saying? And so,
like, is that how you ask your girl to the prom?
If you had fresh pork rinds and some fresh tomatoes, you could always get a girl in your truck, man. That's just the way it was. But, you know, when you look at it, I love that, because guess what? The next step that they're going to have to identify to take it to the next level when it comes to organic meats, organic even vegetables, you're going to have to either farm, but then you're going to start hunting if you're still into eating, being a carnivore. So I love that. And so the way I look at it, the people who go down that route and finally say, okay, I want to eat, you know, this green and organic meat. Well, let's just say they might still be against hunting. Well, it doesn't go hand in hand. That's like me saying I don't believe in ever using my right to defend myself, even if somebody knocks down my door and is shooting my family. Well, there is some people out there I don't think could, no matter what, could ever use their right to pull the trigger on even an intruder that could be doing harm, because they do not have it in them to even shoot someone, even in self-defense. But guess what? Even if you don't, there's Navy SEALs, there's police officers, and there's somebody out there that will defend yourself. And so in this case, this person who wants these organic meat, he can't be against hunting, because if he don't want to shoot it, he's going to hire me to shoot it. If he don't want to handle it, he's going to have somebody out there that's going to have to take this animal and harvest it and put it into the food chain. And last time I checked, good Lord, put that tooth That's for tearing beef or some type of meat, not squishing a sweet pea. I like a sweet pea, and I like collards. I like vegetables, but I also
What do sweet peas and collards get you in Georgia in terms of women?
Dude, it's unbelievable. Like, you got to be careful pulling out the collard greens and cornbread because you get married too young. You got to be careful with that down in Booger Bottom. And if you, I'm gonna tell you, in this day, if you got a girl that can make some good collard greens and fresh cornbread and biscuits, you should really think about getting her a ring. At least get engaged. At least fill it out.
I love advice from Michael Waddell. Michael, there's so much. You got so much going on. I mean, like I said, I need pages and pages. Reams. We kill trees trying to see what the hell you're up to lately.
I want my resume to be so big that Ricky Gervais gets mad at me because of all the paper we made and the pine trees we had to cut down.
Yeah, Amazon deforestation for your resume. Can you? What's the best place we could follow you, track what you're doing? I know you got a billion things on sale. You know, it's amazing the stuff you get that with all your names, your name on it and everything. You know, where do people find you and buy your stuff?
Let me just look. Now, the best place is obviously BoneCollector.com, good starting place, but also we're on social media. That's a big part of our culture right now. Bone Collector Facebook page. We got at Booger Bottom on Twitter. We also got Instagram, and a lot of that stuff I stay pretty engaged in, and I enjoy it, man, because I'm a people person. Obviously, I like to talk and cut up, and so I enjoy, you know, hearing from the people. And
that's funny, cause off camera, your staff of about 15, I thought they handle all your social media. That's amazing. You guys don't do this?
Yeah, you saw me walk up here by myself, but actually some fried turkey that some stranger gave me, and guess what? I ate it, and he's like,
your food tasters back in Georgia?
I ate the fire. He brought me some fried turkey, speaking of organic. And he said, man, I gave it to some guys around here and they didn't eat it. And I'm thinking, because they don't know you. But I will eat it because I'm hungry. So anyway, but no, it's been the biggest blessing because you meet so many friends. And I think it's the biggest thing that's misconceived sometimes. I think people look at what we do and they say, oh, man, they're lucky. And we are, you know, to get a chance to do what we do. But it's a job. And the job is to promote and defend what we love so much. And if I quit tomorrow having a chance to do it at this level, I mean, I still am going to go back and I'm going to hunt and fish and I'm going to, you know, put my Beretta 9 in my console and get my concealed permit. And I'm still going to go grow a garden and I'm going to take my kids hunting and fishing and I'm going to go hunting and fishing. And so when it gets down to it, all I want to do is better educate and promote. If we got 13 million licensed hunters right now, I would hope through the efforts of what we do through Bone Collector and promoting it, and that maybe next year we got 14 million and we keep growing it. And there's enough to share. We got a lot of resources out there and we got to, man. It's a crazy place we're living now, and having a chance to visit a little bit with, you know, all the guys at NRA, the past SHOT Show, it's a very anxious time, exciting things going on, but I'd say we're a little anxious because the election is coming up. There's a lot of crazy things that happen, and if we don't get this vote right coming up soon, we could have this country in a mess that our kids' kids can't unravel when it comes to that fabric of what we're talking about here of just simple American culture.
Well, I know you got a lot of stuff on sale with T-shirts and stuff. If I can offer a slogan that you could put on a T-shirt, and I don't even want any residuals, Michael Waddell says, grow a garden, get a wife. Can you print that? Call your screen printers.
grow a garden, get a wife, and then for the ladies, cook cornbread and get a husband. It's that simple.
All right, I don't want a cut of it. Maybe a little bit. All right, Michael, good to see you, brother. Thanks.
You too, man. Always good to be on.
Michael Waddell at the Great American Outdoor Show, talking with our producer Cameron Gray. Coming up on NRA News, Cam and Company, Mary Callison with 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control. She's going to be at the Cabela's in Dundee, Michigan for an NRA weekend event. It's coming up this weekend at Cabela's around the country. She's going to be talking on a Second Amendment women's panel. We'll talk with Mary about that right after a quick timeout. So stick around. We'll be back with more NRA News, Cam and Company, right after this.
I'm speaking with David Agata and Ron Sasaki with AmericanSnipers.org. Gentlemen, welcome to NRA News.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Tell me, what is AmericanSnipers.org all about?
We're a nonprofit, totally volunteer. Nobody makes any money. But basically what we do is we raise money, we buy gear, and we send it to military snipers overseas to do the business that needs to be done.
And how did you start this?
In 2002-2003, we're basically police snipers from around the country. There's a big, I guess, the community's very tight, but there's a wide spread of us. And a couple of us were being deployed as reservists and National Guard as snipers. They were also police snipers, and they needed gear that they didn't have available. So we put that together, started this little project, raised a little bit of money, and then realized there was a big need. And that was 2003. We've since grown legs, and here we are 14 years later, still raising money, sending gear to snipers in country.
So, Ron, going from where you guys started in 2003 to now, what's the trip been like? How has it grown? What's happened?
Well, it's been quite an adventure for us, but a lot of the needs have not really changed. The sniper units only have so much money, so once that money runs out, the guys are doing without. So we're still providing things, mostly sniper-specific gear, like rangefinders, spotting scopes, rifle scopes, gun cleaning gear, binoculars, that kind of thing. And it's the type of gear, like Dave said, when guys are getting deployed, they would call back home and they're asking mom and dad, hey, can you pick me up a wind meter? Well, folks don't generally know where to get that kind of stuff, but we do. So that's why they come to us, and we're able to get them their specific gear that they need.
Speaking with David Agata and Ron Sasaki with AmericanSnipers.org. All right, so you guys start this. It's a no-brainer to me. It's a great idea and a great service you're all doing. What's the reaction rolling this out in the sniper community?
We have, when people know what we're doing, all they want to do is help. And where they can help us is we raise money. We sell swag. We sell coins and little trinkets. People give and donate. The manufacturers will donate, but for the most part, people hear about it and they go, that's awesome. I'm upset we have to do that, but yeah, we want to help them.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that, David. Ron, what do you guys think about, and I don't want to get political, but what do you think about that? It's got to be frustrating to officers to know that sometimes they can't get the support they need to get the equipment that they need.
I don't think that's ever going to change. I think as long as we have a bureaucracy that has budgets and budgets get tight, we're not going to always be able to get the things we need. We know that as police officers. We know that as the military, there's priorities. And the bottom line is, as American citizens, we're going to support our military. And when people recognize that and we can broad stroke share that, they want to be part of that.
That's cool. Once again, speaking with David Agata and Ron Sasaki with AmericanSnipers.org, you know, there's a lot of folks who don't understand what it is, the mindset, the mentality, the life of a sniper, whether it's a military or police. Ron, what can you tell people about how can they understand best what you guys are, what you go through, you know, help get inside your head?
Well, it's just a very specialized thing that we do. It's something that people volunteer for, but you also have to have the right mindset and the determination and the professionalism to go through that. It's not for everybody, and not everybody gets to do it, but it's a very special thing, and guys who earn that spot, we try and help them out by doing what we do.
All right, it's a big sacrifice. Normally, military police, you're sacrificing.
Right, so give us an idea of some of the people that you've helped and who've benefited from AmericanSnipers.org.
Without naming names, it's been hundreds of guys in all different branches of the service. So we're at events like this. We get approached by people and said, hey, in 2004, you sent us a bunch of gear. You really helped us out. We hear from parents. So that's what we get out of it. That's what we find fulfilling.
Gentlemen, I bet you that never gets old either, right?
No,
not at all.
Not at all. And then some of the gear that we get or we get donated, we get to give that back to the manufacturers. We had a company that donated some knives.
Tell folks how they get more information about AmericanSnipers.org.
Well, you can go to our website at www.AmericanSnipers.org, and that's where they can donate. We always have gun raffles going on constantly of some pretty high-end guns that we get donated to us.
David, Ron, thanks for what you do, and thanks for being part of NRA News.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome back, and thanks so much for joining us here on another edition of NRA News. Cam and Company coming up top of the hour. Hero of the Day, sponsored by Adcor Defense, our on-location sponsor as well. Also, a deal of the day, good guy of the day. We'll head back to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and the Great American Outdoor Show, talking with Louie and Teresa Tuminaro of the Gunfather on Outdoor Channel. Also, Tony Katz, host of Tony Katz and the Morning News on WIBC in Indianapolis, Indiana, joining us in Hour 3. But if you can't make it to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the Great American Outdoor Show, or maybe you want to do a double feature, Cabela's this weekend all across the country, hosting an NRA weekend. Mary Callison with 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control is going to be at the Dundee, Michigan location. And Mary, thanks for coming on the program today.
Hi, thanks, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's good talking with you again. So tell me about
you
this.
Too.
Dundee, Michigan Cabela's, one of the events that they are doing is this Second Amendment Women's Panel, right?
Yes. Yeah, last time I actually participated in it 2 weeks after my sister's attack, and it was me and a panel of 13 other men. So this time it is now going to be just all ladies. However, it'll be a smaller panel, so hopefully as the years go on or they keep doing this, that more and more women will join this so that, you know, more women's voices are heard. But it'll be myself. It'll also be Andrea LaFontaine, the representative of District 32, Carmen Bartholomew of the Well-Armed Woman, as well as Linda Hughes, who is a radio host for WAAM or WAM Radio out there in Michigan. And then we'll just be discussing, it's kind of a range I just went through today. We're driving back from down south, but a range of discussions will be on, you know, the supposed gun show loophole and, you know, gun violence in general. You know, how are we stopping it? What can we do? You know, gun control, is it working? Is it not? Where? And then, you know, concealed carriers and, you know, are there really that many defensive gun uses across the country, which, you know, as I'm making my little list of all these things, I mean, the past couple of days we've had several. So it'll be a very broad discussion, about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours max. I think the other one was about 2 hours. So
all right.
We talk a lot. We're all women, so it'll be all good.
And an opportunity, I'm guessing there's going to be an opportunity for folks there in attendance to ask some questions at some point?
Yes, definitely, yes. And the other, my sister will actually be joining us. She wasn't sure if she was going to want to go ahead and, you know, kind of get in front of more people and discuss, you know, her own situation and why it is so important for women to be, you know, going through, you know, concealed carry training and learning how to use weapons in general or, you know, even non-weapon use self-defense. You know, she didn't have access to, you know, a gun at that point. And so to be able to just fight on your own and using those techniques, we just want as many women to show up as possible just to understand from a victim's perspective just how important training could be to save your life. So hopefully we get, you know, thank you so much for letting me come on and share that, at least for the Dundee one. And hopefully Dundee's in, like, southeastern Michigan, and I think it's pretty close to the Ohio border. So anybody, you know, in the northern Ohio area, you know, maybe they can bring their wives this weekend. I know it's Valentine's Day weekend, but, you know, you love somebody, you want them to learn to be able to defend themselves. So, I mean, what's better than that than checking out guns there, and it's a pretty neat store, so...
I have yet to visit the Dundee, Michigan Cabela's, but it sounds like they're going to have a fantastic weekend. This is one of several events, as you mentioned. But I want to go back to what you said. You said that your sister is going to be there?
Yes, she's gonna be my travel buddy. So we're going to leave early tomorrow morning, travel up there and kind of take part in the other events. But, yeah, she's going to go ahead and go, and hopefully she'll be able to answer. I don't, maybe other ladies want to know or just hear from her, you know, what it was like to go through, what she went through, you know, and now she has a platform to be able to share, maybe help other ladies come forward. I know the last one, there were only a very small handful of women in the crowd. It was pretty much men. But afterwards, you know, I had shared what happened to my sister, and another woman came forward and said, you know, this is my story. And so, you know, it's somewhat healing for other women either that have gone through that, you know, or to be prepared and more focused on, yes, it could happen. You know, for me, it's personal because of my sister, but not only that, I have a fellow law enforcement wife. Her sister was tragically murdered, and she was stabbed to death just a couple years ago, not far from where we live. And my own parents' community, before this happened to my sister, there was a 14-year-old girl that was just a mile and a half from my parents' home stabbed to death. So, you know, women and ladies, I think for me, seeing this, you know, I'm trying to keep it going so that other women understand just how important it is to be aware and to learn to defend yourself, because it really, it doesn't happen until it does, you know? So, mm-hmm. And for me, it's touched me in many ways, just for my sister and those other two, you know, closer people in the community and then that close friend. But yeah, I'm really hoping that more and more women show up and really take it seriously.
You know, I do too, Mary. We were just talking last hour with Kimberly Corbin, who's a survivor of sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this new, I guess it's going to be in the March issue of Cosmopolitan magazine, Cosmo has partnered with Everytown for gun safety, and they've got this section called Singled Out, in which they're appealing to single women. You know, make sure you don't date a gun owner, and really there's no reason for you to be a gun owner either, right? And I think that it is so important, again, that women get the message from survivors that, you know what, if you want to protect yourself, that's your right. No one's out there demanding that everybody go out and become a gun owner. But that absolutely, you don't have to feel bad about wanting a firearm to protect yourself.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, and this is my view of ladies and friends and stuff like that. You know, after this happened to my sister, they're all like, oh, man, Mary, now I understand why, you know, why you joined and why you work with what you work with and, you know, why you carry and all this. And it's like, you know, and it's after any type of major event that's scary, you know, the stabbing or, you know, bigger world events when people are like, oh, more aware. But then it kind of tapers off, you know, it's like, and you get more complacent again about it. And I'm like, no, I'm like, this is why I drive to this. And this is why I'm trying to talk to every single woman possible. And one of my own personal little hobbies and sales stuff, I ended up talking to a woman that wanted to get something from me. She goes, oh, I'm in Michigan. I'm like, well, you should come out to this, you know, event. So she's inviting, you know, a couple other lady friends and, you know, and they know they're in these jobs where, you know, some of them, one drive a school bus and it's kind of limited to what they can do, but they've started to work with, when their job won't allow them to carry, they're at least taking self-defense courses. And back home right now, I've been working with a friend who has a dojo and we've been posting in pretty much every sales site, you know, if you don't want to carry, you should at least learn how to go get away from an attacker. You know, how do you get up off the ground if something happens? What do you do, you know, and go through those as much as you can so that it becomes, you know, you get in a bad situation, you can get away. You know, so if you don't want to carry a gun, like, and I want to be a gun owner, well, you have an option to still be able to defend yourself somehow, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Absolutely. You know, I know that you are a Second Amendment advocate, but I know that you're also a self-defense advocate. And while the two, I think, go hand in hand, you're right. Even if you're not comfortable owning a firearm, even if that's something that, you know, you don't want to do, at least think about ways that you can protect yourself.
Exactly.
Well, listen, remind folks again, when is this panel going to take place this weekend?
It's going to be tomorrow at 3:00 up in Dundee, Michigan, and it should be about an hour and a half or so at the most. And I think the address is 110 Cabela Boulevard in Dundee, Michigan.
All right. Well, listen,
quite a large place.
I hope you have a great turnout. I know there'll be a lot of customers there, and I hope folks take a few minutes out of their shopping schedule to take part in this event. Mary, thank you again for coming on the program. Give your sister our best, and I hope we can talk with you again very soon.
Thank you. I'm hoping to get her down to NRA this year.
All right. We'll keep our fingers crossed for
you.
It. Mary, thanks again. Yeah. Mary Callison joining us from 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control here on NRA News Cam and Company. And, again, it's not just the Dundee, Michigan Cabela's. If you got a Cabela's near you, check out your store's website. There are going to be events taking place throughout the weekend on the 13th and on the 14th. And you never know what's going to be at your local store if you can't make it to the Dundee, Michigan location. Now, coming up, top of Hour 3, we have our Hero of the Day, sponsored by AdCorps Defense, our Deal of the Day, our Good Guy of the Day, plus we'll take you back to Harrisburg and the Great American Outdoor Show. Louis and Teresa Tuminaro from the Gunfather on Outdoor Channel will join us. Tony Katz, host of Tony Katz in the Morning News on WIBC, will be with us as well. Over at the New York Times Health Blog, fascinating story here by Anat O'Connor on a new book out by Mara Shatrit Klein, a doctor who's written the book The Dirt Cure, Growing Healthy Kids with Food Straight from the Soil. This book, I think, would appeal to the folks who are heading out to the Great American Outdoor Show, because I think they've already been doing this on their own. But basically, the good doctor there says that our kids need to be spending more time outside, eating more food that comes from the dirt. It's okay to have a little vegetable garden, maybe even some wild game. What do you think? She did an interview with the New York Times, a food blog, and she it's interesting. She refers to in Japan. She says there's this idea called Shinrin-yoku, or forest bathing, which means taking short visits to the forest. Almost like, I don't know, heading out to the woods on a fall weekend, maybe when deer season starts, something like that. Short trips to the woods, not living like a hermit in the forest, just making some short trips to the woods. She says it's been shown to reduce inflammatory markers in the body and boost beneficial hormones. She says we know that there are many physical benefits to children being outdoors and being physically active in nature. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, again, doesn't have to be hunting. Hike, camp, fish, whatever. But I think the doctor might be onto something here. And I'll tell you, when I was up in Harrisburg earlier in the week, it was really, really cool to see all of the families walking around, to see the sons and daughters who were fascinated by the different exhibits, who were happy to be walking with mom and dad. That doesn't always happen, depending on the age of the child, you know. But the next generation of hunters and individuals who love the outdoors, they were there in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, at the Great American Outdoor Show. And we are seeing again, as we've talked with the folks, we'll talk actually with Louie about this later on in the show. You know, we are seeing people who did not grow up in a hunting family. It was not part of their family tradition. Who are deciding now that this is something that they want to do. And a lot of them actually live in urban areas. The doctor who wrote this book actually lives in the Bronx. There have been stories over the last couple of years highlighting the growth of urban hunters, people who live in big cities, but who also don't want to spend all of their time in big cities. And so you actually have hunt clubs in New York and Washington, D.C., San Francisco. Individuals who get together and find places nearby anyway where they can hunt, where they can get wild game that they can put on their plate. Again, a lot of them didn't grow up doing this. This is something that they've come to as adults. It's a very good thing. All right, stick around. Hour 3 of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, is coming up right after this quick timeout. We'll see you on the flip side here on NRA News, Cam and Company.
I'm speaking with Vicki Callmaker. Vicki, you do so much. Women's Shooting Academy, 1 Million United, Safety Academy. Where do you want to start? Should we start with Women's Shooting Academy?
Absolutely. Let's start with Shooting Academy.
All right. Welcome to NRA News. What's it all
Thank
about?
You. The Women's Shooting Academy really came to be, I thought I was just going to teach one class, right? I thought I was just going to teach women how to shoot a gun. And over the last 7 or 8 years, it's just really evolved into something that I could have never imagined. And I've trained thousands of women, and I'm just all about the art of self-preservation.
What is that? Tell me what you mean when you say the art of self-preservation.
You know, I want women to realize that they're worth protecting, their family is worth protecting, and obviously, you know, if we're going to go gun, that is the equalizer. I'd like to see every woman carrying a gun. But at the same time, I realize that a gun is not for every woman. And so it's really taking her on a journey, a personal journey, about her personal safety and getting her to realize that she can own it, she can embrace it, she can fight for it, and she can lose it.
Wow. So how do you do that at Women's Shooting Academy?
Well, our most popular class is called Introduction to Handguns. And what I do with the students is they show up, they spend about 5 or 6 hours with me in the classroom. They learn how to load and unload. They learn everything there is to know about a firearm. And part of that is teaching them the lingo so that when they end up at the gun counter, they don't sound like an idiot. And teaching them the proper way to stand, to hold the gun, really focusing on the fundamentals. Then I take them to the range, and I provide the guns, the targets, the ammunition, and they shoot five calibers. They shoot both revolvers and semi-automatics. And after an eight-hour day, they're ready to go to the gun counter, and they can do that alone. They can buy their first handgun by themselves. And then, you know, if they want to come back and take some additional training, absolutely. If they want to get their concealed carry permit, we can do that. They want to learn about shotguns for home defense, we can do that. I'm really excited because I'm starting to see that women want to shoot the big guns. They want to shoot the ARs. They want to shoot this fun stuff. And when they realize it's not as complicated as they thought,
right,
they're in.
There you go. Speaking with Vicki Callmaker, so let's talk about 1 Million United. What is that?
So 1 Million United actually started out to be very political. And it was my answer back to Mr. Bloomberg several years ago. Don't tell us we cannot unite. So hence 1 Million United.
Right.
But over the last year and a half, it's evolved. And what I decided to do with 1 Million United was to turn it into a 501c3 nonprofit. Because I believe that there's women across this entire country who need to hear what I have to say. And I want to offer that to them 100% no charge. I see myself on a large platform teaching safety seminars and really uniting women. And so 1 Million United will be 100% donor funded. And, you know, I got to learn how to raise money. I don't know how to raise money, but I need to raise money. And so that will allow me to just broaden my services. You know, I've got my for-profit companies. Let's do something that will benefit every woman across the country.
All right, almost out of time. How can we get more information about everything you're up to?
Go to VickiCallmaker.com, and from there you can find 1 Million United, the Women's Shooting Academy, and everything else I do.
Vicki Callmaker, thanks for what you're doing. You're doing so much, and thanks for being here on NRA News. Stay in touch with us. How about
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back. Hour 3 of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, starts right now. On the program this hour, Hero of the Day, sponsored by AdCor Defense, our Deal of the Day. We've got our Good Guy of the Day coming up as well. Also, from the Great American Outdoor Show, Louie and Teresa Tuminaro of the Gunfather on the Outdoor Channel, and our friend Tony Katz of WIBC in Indianapolis, Indiana, will join us on the program as well. Right now, let's get to our Hero of the Day, sponsored by AdCor Defense, from Peoria, Arizona, ABC 15 in Arizona, with the story. They say a Peoria homeowner stopped a pair of would-be burglars. It was Thursday morning. According to police, the man and his wife heard their doorbell ring multiple times around 9 o'clock in the morning. They ignored it. Figured, whatever, solicitor. Then they heard glass break. ABC 15's Lauren Vargas says the husband went to investigate. They found two people trying to get in the home, one of the suspects halfway inside the window. Police say the man shot the 17-year-old intruder in the leg. Both he and the second suspect ran away, drove off in a light-colored sedan. Police responded to the scene after getting a 911 call from the homeowner. An officer reportedly spotted the injured suspect at a Circle K nearby, where he was taken into custody. Second suspect ran off and so far has not been identified. But the homeowner there in Peoria, Arizona, defended himself and his wife from those would-be intruders on a Thursday morning. Our deal of the day from MassLive.com in Holyoke, Massachusetts, actually Springfield Court. That's where Victor Santini faced federal judge Mark Mastriani. Now, the 47-year-old Santini, a self-professed reformed Latin Kings gang member, he was in court for his sentencing on drug charges, crack cocaine distribution. He presented to the judge a handwritten proposal for troubled youth that he wants to launch once he gets out of prison. He had a lot of supporters there. He says that he has changed his ways. He has discovered Christianity. He is a different person. The judge wasn't sure that he was buying it. But Mr. Santini did get a lucky break. According to Mass Live, he has a long criminal history filled with larcenies and assaults. He narrowly missed being labeled as an armed career criminal. This because of a U.S. Supreme Court decision, plus Mass Live says related pending litigation in the First Circuit Appeals Court. Back in June, the nation's high court struck down language in the Armed Career Criminal Act of 1984. Majority of the justices ruled that the law was overly vague. In the case of Johnson versus the United States, court found that a catch-all phrase to define violent felonies was too broad. So, Mr. Santini, had he been sentenced a few months earlier, might have fallen under these provisions, but nope. Judge Mastriani said, do you understand the monstrous numbers that are at play here if you are categorized as a career offender? Do you understand, he asked, how fortunate you are to avoid being sentenced as a career offender? In other words, you've racked up quite the rap sheet here, Mr. Santini. Do you understand what it takes to be considered an armed career criminal? Do you understand you skated by the hair of your teeth here? How fortunate you are. Do you understand? He said, I would call it blessed, sir. The judge said that term would apply. Mass Live says Santini, previously described as an elder in the Latin Kings organization, was caught dealing cocaine to an undercover informant in 2014. Swept up at a multi-agency crackdown called Operation 60 Minutes. The defense attorney wanted Mr. Santini to face a 21-month sentence in federal custody. The judge said no. In fact, he said to the defense attorney and to Mr. Santini, he said, I'm asking you to step into the world of reality. He said, the sentence that you are asking for is not based in reality. You're asking for less than 2 years behind bars. You have a rap sheet as long as my arm, and you are now facing federal crack cocaine distribution charges. Come step over here in the real world. Join us. The defense attorney for Mr. Santini said that Santini was raised in a brutally abusive household, left home when he was 13, turning to the streets, and ultimately gang life. Then the defense attorney says he was caught in the revolving door of county jail and state prison from the age of 23. He's 47 now. The judge, I think very reasonably, asked, why didn't you take advantage of any of the opportunities that had been given to you previously? If you were caught in the revolving door of justice here between the jail and the prison and the streets for the past almost 25 years, why didn't you ever try to get out yourself? Since you're asking for leniency now. And Santini said, it didn't matter to me whether I died. It didn't matter to me, he said, whether I got a life bid. Victor Santini said, I didn't think at that point in my life, I didn't think I had an answer to a judge. I didn't think I had an answer to the public. He said, but I'm 47 years old now and I look at things differently. Mass Live says the judge, apparently unconvinced, telling Santini that he had shaken his view of incarceration as a venue for rehabilitation as well as punishment. Judge told Victor Santini, you challenge the correctness of my belief. He said, you are the argument that for some people, I'd like to think very few people, jail is simply there to punish. You are that argument because we keep seeing you here. You haven't been rehabilitated, even though you have been in constant contact with the criminal justice system since the age of 23, and you are now pushing 50. For half your life, you have spent in jail, in prison, on the street, on parole, on probation. And again, the intent of the criminal justice system is to rehabilitate you. It is not to punish you. Not according to the judge. They said, you've shaken my faith in that. Because we've tried. And here's the thing. The system probably has offered opportunities to Victor Santini. I'm guessing multiple opportunities to turn his life around. But how hard is it? How possible is it to rehabilitate somebody who doesn't want to be rehabilitated? You know, Victor Santini said, I didn't want to change. He said it didn't matter whether I got a life sentence, didn't matter whether I died. Didn't want to answer to the judge, didn't want to answer to the victims of my crimes, didn't want to answer to the public. None of this mattered. Now, he says, it matters. And maybe it's right. Maybe it does. I hope that he's being honest with the judge. I hope that he's able to turn his life around. I don't think 47 is too late to turn your life around, even if you spent almost 25 years rotating between the courthouse and the jail cell and the street. But again, until you want to make that change, you can attempt to rehabilitate someone all that you want. You're not going to be very successful. And at some point, when rehabilitation becomes less likely, maybe the plea deals have to stop. Maybe then it is a matter of, well, every time we let this person out, they commit another violent crime. Perhaps it's time to stop offering the plea bargains and the minimal amount of time behind bars. And, I don't know, maybe see if actually holding them to the letter of the law does anything. Now, Victor Santini, 5 years in federal prison. He'll have to do 85% of that sentence before he is released. And let's hope he does take advantage of those opportunities that are afforded him behind bars in the U.S. federal prison system. Our good guy of the day from Florence, Alabama, and the Shoals Insider website. Florence Police Officer Zach Maxwell getting some kudos from Florence Police Chief Ron Tyler. He said, for the second time in a week, Officer Zach Maxwell has saved someone's life. It was last week. Officer Maxwell came to the aid of a sheriff's deputy who had been the victim of a stabbing, was able to apply some medical attention to that deputy and saved that deputy's life. On Wednesday night, shortly after 11 p.m., the officer got a call of a stabbing there in Florence, Alabama. He arrived and found a male victim lying on the ground in front of the home, suffering from multiple stab wounds. And Officer Maxwell was able to, deliver some medical aid until paramedics arrived. The suspect in this case, 71-year-old Patsy Witt Dixon, was in the home when the officers arrived. They were able to gather evidence from the victim, indicating that an argument had occurred, the Shoals Insider says, allegedly stemming from Facebook activity. And at some point, Patsy Dixon, police allege, stabbed her husband with a kitchen knife and then sprayed him numerous times with spray paint. Police Chief Ron Tyler there in Florence, Alabama, said, I cannot be more proud of how Officer Maxwell has been providing a high level of police service to injured victims in this community. He represents our department with the highest level of professionalism. To be able to respond to a very fluid, very emotional, high-stress, and active situation, and then to remain under control enough to assess the situation and begin providing life-saving medical treatment demonstrates the kind of officer that Zach Maxwell is. The chief went on to say this furthermore indicates that our department's training and current practices are having the desired impact on victims within our community. Detective Justin Wright, lead detective on the case, says the case is much different than what we normally encounter concerning a domestic violence case, and it highlights the fact that domestic violence spans age, race, background, gender. He says the fact that this case involves an older male victim and an older female suspect shows that domestic violence can happen anywhere and at any time in our lives. The victim taken to a local hospital, treated for an arterial stab wound, but it looks like he is going to recover. Right now, his wife charged with domestic violence in the first degree and a first degree assault, currently being held on bond, totaling $10,000. That's it, $10,000. But Officer Zach Maxwell there in Florence, Alabama, coming to the aid of that stabbing victim, coming to the aid of a second stabbing victim in the period of a week. We thank you, Officer Maxwell, for being one of the many good guys out there. All right, when we return here on this edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, we're going to head to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, virtually anyway. I'll be heading there physically in a few hours. I'll be there tomorrow and Sunday at the Great American Outdoor Show, the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex. But when we come back after a quick timeout, we're going to talk with Louie and Teresa Tuminaro from the Gunfather on Outdoor Channel. Stick around. We'll be right back with more right after this.
I'm speaking with Jim Sapieca, director of the NRA Museums. Jim, there's three museums. Let's talk about that third museum you guys have way out west.
That third museum is kind of a little hidden jewel box. It doesn't get the press that the other two bigger museums get, but it's a spectacular little display case. It's the Frank Brownell Museum of the Southwest, and it's at the NRA Whittington Center in Raton, New Mexico. Now, folks who are really shooters will know what the Whittington Center is, but those who may not be that active, it's a spectacular range and hunting complex that is owned and operated by the NRA. There are tens of thousands of acres out there with spectacular ranges where a lot of different championship matches are shot in addition to general recreational and sporting shooting. But they also have the Brownell Museum of the Southwest, and they have some great guns there. Of course, history of that area is just spectacular, going back to the conquistadors. And they follow the evolution of firearms in that area throughout that multiple century span. They also have firearms that are used in the types of competitions that take place at the Whittington Center. And they recently got a spectacular group of modern engraved firearms. There are masterworks there that I have never seen the likes of before. So if you're in that area, and it's a great area for vacationing, there's a lot of attractions in that area, be sure you don't miss this little jewel box of a museum there.
And how do you get to see all the museums online?
Well, you can. We have several social media platforms. We've got, of course, the website, nramuseums.com. And, of course, we have our Facebook page. You can friend us there and get our Gun of the Day posts. So you can visit us on the Internet, Facebook, get the books. And for sure, come by and see the three museums. They're all open every day of the week, and admission is always free.
I want a woman president, but I want an honest president more. I want someone who can place their hand on a Bible and swear to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution without telling a lie. Someone who believes in the integrity of that office. A president whose actions reinforce the moral lessons I teach my children. There are many powerful, accomplished women in both parties who meet and exceed that standard. But you, Mrs. Clinton, are not one of them. Your past is littered with shameful, dishonest behavior, decades of decisions that point toward your own power and fortune, not the best interest of women, the country, or the truth. There is no greater threat to my freedom than another dishonest president. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
What kind of government cares more about appeasing Islamic terrorists than defending the constitutional rights of its citizens? A government that would disarm us during the age of terror. Nothing would make us more vulnerable to generations of suffering and slaughter than the destruction of our Second Amendment. But many of our politicians, aided by a relentless media, are launching that attack themselves. They dream of joining the rest of the disarmed peoples of the world, entrusting our survival to the mercy of monsters. The greatest damage the terrorists could ever inflict upon us is disarmament at the hands of the political elites. But we will never offer our right to survive as a fool's ransom to the world's killers. Our freedom is what they fear most. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company. Still to come on the program, Tony Katz, host of Tony Katz in the Morning News on WIBC in Indianapolis, Indiana. But right now, I want to head back to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and the Great American Outdoor Show. Stars of the Gunfather on Outdoor Channel with us right now, Louie and Teresa Tuminaro. Louie, Teresa, how are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
We're doing great.
I am fantastic. I appreciate you coming on the program. You guys having a good Great American Outdoor Show?
We are having a great day. And actually, today's Louie's birthday. So we're celebrating here in Harrisburg with everybody.
Oh, congratulations. Happy birthday. If I had known that, Louie, we would have gotten you a cake.
Are you kidding me? I am just happy to be on the East Coast.
Exactly.
This isn't your standard Montana accent that we're hearing right now, Louie, right?
No, Long Island, New York.
So I've got to ask, we've been lucky enough to have you on the program on a couple of occasions. Obviously, you love being in Montana, but as you say, it's good to get back to the East Coast. And, you know, there are a ton of hunters and sportsmen and gun owners, even what we think of as anti-gun places like Long Island or New Jersey or Massachusetts. They're there.
Mm-hmm. They are here. I cannot believe the hundreds of thousands of people that support this industry.
Yeah, it's a great turnout. It's a great show. We're having a blast out here. And it's always great to see everybody out with their families and the kids out here and celebrating firearms and our freedom.
Well, absolutely. And I know that family's important to you all. I mean, this is a family business that we're talking about. And, you know, Louie, you learned from your dad. So as you see these families walking around the aisles there at the Great American Outdoor Show, you have a chance to stop and talk with, you know, a lot of the viewers of your program. I'm sure they're coming up to you and telling you how many of the folks that you are talking to or fans of the show actually watch with their families?
See, what's happening, and it's a wonderful thing, is that hundreds of people are coming up to us. And when they're coming up to us, their kids are next to them, mm-hmm. and their wives are with them, and the families are watching our show together, and that's what it's all about.
Yes.
And Teresa, how important is that to you?
It's extremely important for me. Obviously, being a woman, it's great to see the moms and the wives out there with their families, and when they come up and say, it's so great to see you out there with your family, and it's a great connection that we have, and it's all around family, and that's what we're about.
So, Teresa, I've got to ask, are you seeing there in Montana, I mean, I kind of think like everybody in Montana is a gun owner already, but I'm sure that's not the case.
They are.
Who's coming into the store right now? Who's coming into the shop, and who are you seeing as your customer base? Has it changed over the past couple of years? Has it expanded?
I think it has. I think more women are just feeling more comfortable with firearms, and it's nice that they can get out there with their husbands, boyfriends, or parents, or whoever they're out there with. Education is so important that I think that a lot of now is that the community is coming together and getting the kids out there and getting the moms out there. And I think all around it's just a nice balance of people that we've been seeing coming in.
And also what's very, very important are that the manufacturers are becoming family friendly also.
Yes.
So now a lot of the big manufacturers are making shotguns for women.
Yes.
Handguns sized for women. And I think everybody's getting it, and We're just showing how it's done.
It's not just a matter of slapping some pink paint on there and saying, all right, we're good to go, right? I mean, there's actual, you know, it is interesting. I mean, how much thought and design is going into, you know, just the simple realization that, okay, not every gun owner is going to look like you, Louie.
I hope not. Now, I mean, we have women coming in. You have small women. Mm-hmm. You know, you have, you know, medium-sized women, and everybody's hands are different. So, it's, you know, it's like a car. You know, you got to test drive it. So when people come into our shop, you know, a woman's going to pick up, you know, a handgun, and then she's just going to say for some reason, like, this one just feels right, you know, and we'll take her out. We'll bring it to the range. We'll shoot it. And then when she goes home, you know, she feels good about her purchase, and she feels comfortable mm-hmm. what she's shooting, and that's most important.
Absolutely.
Is that your advice for people who are thinking about purchasing a firearm for the first time, and they ask that question, well, what gun should I buy, Louie? Is that what you answer? Go out and hold these guns?
Yep.
Try them out?
What I feel and what we do at our gun shop is a woman shouldn't be, you know, just – be shy about wanting to own a gun. Okay. Mm-hmm. She should walk into a gun shop, and if that person's not spending the time with her, well, then go to somebody else or go to a different shop.
Yeah.
Go to a shop to where you can go and say, hey, what's available for me? You know, hold them, feel them, mm-hmm. and ask them to go to the range with them. If they're not, then they're not working hard enough for you.
Mm-hmm. Talking again with Louie and Teresa Tuminaro from the Gunfather on Outdoor Channel. And so Louie, tell me, what can we expect to see from the Gunfather this year?
Well, first year, you know, it was a lot of family. And don't get me wrong, this year is a lot of family, but we just have a little different, you know, dimension this year. We're getting out more. Mm-hmm. You guys are going to see lots of family shooting together.
Yep.
You're going to see
you working a lot more on the guns and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, very, very big is that mm-hmm. a lot of people have been asking, hey, Louie, you know, we're seeing what you're building, but we really, really want to see it. So we're bringing more gun, you know, to the viewers.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And I mean, I guess it's always hard to find that. What's the balance, right? Because you want to tell the story
sure.
and you want, you know, compelling characters. But at the same time, you're right. You've got an audience that is very interested in the tool, right? And so how do you get that balance?
It is a very, very big balance. Mm-hmm. So here it is. We want to show our family. We want to show a little bit of gun. We want to show my son growing up in our family around firearms. You want to see my wife in the show. You want to see what she's doing, how vital my wife is to the industry as a mom, you know, my daughters. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that every entity, you know, of our every entity with our family is vital to the show.
Yeah.
So where are we right now, you think, in terms of your support for the Second Amendment? Obviously, you know, Montana is a pretty gun-friendly state. So have you noticed, you know, a rise in anti-gun attitudes? Are you noticing a rise in pro-gun attitudes? Has it kind of remained the same there over the past couple of years?
In Montana itself, I think it's kind of been the same, I would think, a
sure.
little bit. I think as people feel more comfortable and not so shy away from being afraid of them, some people have never held a gun. I mean, we've had a woman in our shop before who is like 65 years old who's never held a firearm. These are the people that, you know, they need the education, and I think that has changed. Having the education and having more things out there for people to, like a forum for people to go to talk to, women's groups, you know, children's groups, and just in general, having all that information out there has changed some people's knowledge, you know, to feel more comfortable doing what they're doing.
And, you know, I know that you guys do a lot of restoration work. You're dealing with, you know, firearms that have a lot of historic value. Is there, you know, we've certainly seen, I think, an increase in the number of people who say, okay, I want a gun for self-defense. But does that spill over? I mean, once you've become a gun owner and you're maybe carrying a firearm for self-defense, do you start looking at other areas of, you know, quote unquote gun culture, whether it's competitive shooting or hunting or collecting, is the self-defense aspect sort of that stepping stone?
You know, the self-defense is really, really important, and it is, and we have people coming in. But, like, our business has so many different facets. So, like, people can come in and buy new firearms.
Mm-hmm.
people can come in and bring us a family heirloom that we will take and restore.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, we just to us, we can cover it all.
Yeah.
These hands right here.
Exactly. And I always say it's just like a woman with a pair of shoes. You can walk into a shop and you just know what fits. And truly, I feel like any woman would be out there. Just get out there and do it. It's a great thing. And to see all these people here with their families, and for us, this is like the best part for us.
Absolutely. It's really great at the Great American Outdoor Show. There's so many things to see. But honestly, you know, you start having conversations with people and the people that you meet. That's my favorite part of the Great American Outdoor Show as well.
Us too.
Listen, we want to thank the Outdoor Channel for allowing us to share our family with the entire world. What we do is who we are. We love what we do. Mm-hmm. We love it so much that we moved our family from New York all the way to Montana to pursue our dream. If it's in your heart, do it. Mm-hmm.
Again, we're talking with Louie and Teresa Tumanaro from the Gunfather on the Outdoor Channel. Are you going to be at the Great American Outdoor Show this weekend? Where can we find you?
Yeah, we'll be here tomorrow. We'll be at the Outdoor Channel booth signing autographs from what time?
1:30 to 2:30, and then from 3 to 4. Booth number 463, I think.
All right, not far from the...
But come out and see us. We love to hear everybody's stories. We love to meet everybody. And, you know, we're just like everyday people. We're moms, dads, and we work every day. And
every day.
So it's nice to get out there and actually, you know, talk to the people that do the same things that we do every day.
Right.
Sure. If you guys see us walking around the show, because we're big fans of the show, we love Pennsylvania. We love the American Great, you know, outdoor show here. Mm-hmm. So just walk up to us if you see us and say hi. Do not be embarrassed or anything. Come up with just like you are.
All right. I'm gonna do that. I'm not going to be embarrassed because I'll be there tomorrow. No. So I will come by and I'll say hi. And when can we watch The Gunfather on Outdoor Channel?
You can see The Gunfather on Monday nights at 8 p.m.
Eastern
time.
Eastern.
All right. Louie, Teresa, thank you both for coming on the program. It was a real pleasure getting a chance to catch up. And I will I'll see you in person tomorrow.
Thank you. And just remember, we love family, our freedom, and firearms.
Can't find any fault with that.
That's right.
All right. Thanks, y'all. Louie and Teresa Tumanaro are joining us again from Gunfather on Outdoor Channel and the Custom Shop there in Montana. If you are a Montana resident or a visitor, you can check out Louie's shop in person. And we were talking earlier in the program about this attack in Columbus, Ohio. A man with a machete walking into the Nazareth restaurant and deli around 6 p.m. yesterday. And according to patrons in the restaurant, it didn't really say anything. He talked with an employee, actually, then turned and left. About 30 minutes later, he came back, 6:30 in the evening, you know, kind of during the dinner rush, walked up to a man and woman sitting by the door, and then began his attack. A 911 call came in. ABC News reported a mom telling 911, some guy pulled out a machete and started stabbing people. I ran out with my kids. Another 911 caller said, my wife just called me in a panic, telling me a guy in the restaurant is stabbing people. She's hiding, I think, out back. She cut her hand pretty bad. Two people at the restaurant described the attack as carnage and systematic, according to ABC 6 in Columbus. And ABC News also reporting Columbus Police Sergeant Rich Wiener describing the customers who did try to fight back against this attacker, saying that some of the patrons there started throwing chairs at him, just trying to get him out of there. There was no rhyme or reason as to who he was going after. The suspect, identified as 30-year-old Muhammad Berry, fled the scene in a car, police in pursuit. A 911 call came in while the chase was going on. Caller said, you need to get this guy. He just nearly collided, nearly caused an injury accident, and he has a long knife. He told 911, did you hear me? He said he has a weapon. Berry at some point spun out his vehicle, got out of the car with his machete and a knife in the other. Officers, according to news reports, deployed a taser against Muhammad Berry, but it was ineffective. And then when Berry lunged at officers, an officer shot him multiple times, according to authorities there in Columbus, Ohio, a 25-year veteran of the force. Firing those shots. Four victims hospitalized after the attack. One of them treated and released. 54-year-old William Foley in a critical but stable condition today. Gerald Russell and Debbie Russell, both 43, described as being stable today. Police said that no officers were injured. FBI is investigating the suspect's motive, according to Columbus Police Chief, saying that the motive is not yet clear. We will, again, keep following that story out of Columbus, Ohio, and the attack, again, at a restaurant, the random nature of this attack. We were talking, I guess it was last week, with Clay Turner, the creative director at America's First Freedom Magazine, about his article on the sheepdogs versus terrorists. And the this is something that, Clay noted. And we do live in a day and age in which violent crime is decreasing. We are, as Americans, are blessed to live in a society in which violent crime at 40-year lows. But that doesn't mean that we live in a nation that is free from crime. And as a matter of fact, the random nature of these types of attacks, whether this turns out to be an official lone wolf-style terror attack, again, we don't know the motive, or if this was a mentally unstable individual or an individual who harbored some sort of personal animosity against the owner, we don't know. Right now, again, there doesn't appear to be a specific connection between the attacker and where the attack took place. But we do know that this was another soft target. Much like the church that this ISIS sympathizer was planning on attacking in Michigan. Not a federal courthouse, not a government building with metal detectors, not a place where there is a vast amount of armed security, but a restaurant, a church. Ron Noble, the former head of Interpol, talking after the Westgate Mall attack in Nairobi, Kenya in 2013, I think it was, talked to ABC News, and he brought up the soft target versus hard target. And he said, this is really what concerns law enforcement officers. How do you protect those soft targets? Because there aren't enough armed security to harden up every building out there. So how do you protect those soft targets? And he said, one of the things that they were doing in Interpol at the time is they were trying to restrict the movement of terrorists, trying to stop terrorists from gaining access to foreign nations through legal entry, or maybe illegal entry using fraudulent passports, but using passports. But he also said after the attack in Nairobi, Kenya, at that mall that went on for days, he said that you also have to start thinking about it. It makes law enforcement think about armed citizens, individuals who can fight back. And he said, again, this was after an attack at that mall, he said, can you imagine a similar attack like that occurring in the United States and lasting for days? If it happened in Texas or in Colorado. The then head of Interpol said he didn't think it would play out the same way. And so, again, as we hear about more of these types of attacks, you may hear more and more law enforcement talk about the need for individuals to protect themselves and each other, because there's just simply not enough law enforcement. There will not be enough law enforcement to go around to harden up every possible potential target out there. All right, when we come back here after a quick timeout on NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler, our friend Tony Katz, host of Tony Katz in the Morning News, will be with us on the program talking about some of the big stories of the week. Stick around. We'll be back with much more NRA News, Cam and Company, right after this.
Speaking with Wendy Lefevre, managing editor with NRA Family and Big News Wendy, NRA Publications announcing the debut of its newest web property, NRA Family. Thank you for being here on NRA News. And what is NRA Family?
Well, NRA Family is our newest web property, but it's actually an outgrowth of a property that we've had since 1981. It used to be just NRA Insights, and it was our publication for junior members of the NRA. And what we started to do is we started to look at the fact that, yes, we have this publication that's just for kids, but the truth is that most children really start their education with firearms with their family, their moms and dads, their grandparents passing on traditions. So we thought, what we really need to be doing is we need to be addressing the entire family. And so that's why we sort of transformed this publication to a website that we have now that is free to everyone. You don't have to sign up or give any sort of a password to get in. And you can look at all kinds of different topics that cover the unique challenges that gun-owning families face.
So it's NRAfamily.org is the website, correct?
That is correct.
Correct. And it used to be, and a lot of folks around NRA know about NRA Insights and the great publication that was and the great web property that was. So this is a great, Wendy, in my estimation, great natural evolution here, because one of the big things with the shooting sports and hunting and firearms is the whole concept of mentoring. And it's such a natural thing when you can take this, what you guys have done is take this natural progression of passing something on to the next generation to your kids, to your family. And that's what you guys are achieving here with the NRA family.
We're trying to address not just junior beginners, but also perhaps adult beginners, because you'll have gun-owning families, and maybe mom has never been interested, and maybe dad would like to get her into it. And then that way it can become a sport that the entire family can enjoy together and, you know, for years to come.
And how great is that? You're right. It could be dad to mom, or it could even be, you know, you've got a son or daughter, older son or daughter, who's into the shooting sports or hunting or plinking and or maybe on a rifle team, and they introduce, you know, their parents or their mom to it. So I guess that mentoring thing can go all different ways.
Absolutely. And so that's why we're trying to address this in a holistic fashion. So we're not just talking to one member of the family. We're talking to all of them.
It's awesome. Speaking with Wendy LeFever, managing editor of NRA Family, and talk to us a little bit, Wendy, about, you know, how important it is about carrying this tradition on with the family and, you know, and how powerful this is when you can see this actually happening with a family getting involved in the shooting sports. What have you seen?
We've seen all kinds of just inspiring tales. We've seen articles coming from teenagers who joined a shooting sport just because they were looking for scholarships and then got their parents into it. We are looking at parents who are, you know, introducing their kids to the sports for the first time. We're talking about people who are facing physical disabilities who are being mentored, and so that they can go out into the field, they can go out to the range, and they can enjoy these same things. Because shooting is one of those pastimes that you don't have to be the biggest, the strongest, the fastest to enjoy. And that's part of what makes it so wonderful. But the other thing that's so wonderful is that the NRA fights for our freedoms, but if we don't have more generations to come to pick up, you know, the torch and to enjoy those freedoms, then what are we fighting for? So it's so crucial that we continue to address the next generation and the people that are going to be carrying this flag for us for the next 100 years.
Wendy LeFever, I guess it's NRA Family, right? Where you get more information, right? NRAfamily.org.
That's right. You can visit NRAfamily.org, and it's free to use. You don't have to be a member. And while you're there, you can also sign up for our social media. We have a Facebook page, which is NRA Family. We have Twitter, which is NRA Family. And we have an Instagram page, which is NRA Family. And one of the things that we really like to do is we really like to interact with our readers. We'd love to hear your stories. If you send us a picture of you taking your daughter to the range for the first time,
cool.
Well, you know, we can help you share that with the world.
I love it. Wendy LeFever with NRA Family. Okay, so we got about 30 seconds left, so I want you, Wendy, to talk to folks out there. If they haven't tried the shooting sports in families, why do they need to try it?
The reason why you need to try the shooting sports, if you haven't done it before, is because it gives you such a sense of personal satisfaction. It's taking control of your life in a way that a lot of people don't really understand. And once you get behind a trigger and put it on the target and then look at what you can do with just a little bit of instruction, it's so empowering.
Wendy, thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for being on NRA News.
Welcome back to NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler. We want to wish, by the way, our executive producer, John Pop, A continued recovery. We have not mentioned over the past couple of days, but John is doing much better. He is recovering, and he will be back here shortly. But also want to thank all of the folks at NRA News behind the scenes who have just made this week up in Harrisburg at the Great American Outdoor Show and here at the Mothership, and then this coming weekend at the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, such a success. So thank you here in the Mothership, Danny and Justin up in Harrisburg, Mike and Dennis and Kyle and Cameron. And I want to welcome to the program right now a man without whom this show would not be complete. He joins us each and every Friday. He kicks off our weekend, which is weird because he's a morning show guy. Our friend Tony Katz from WIBC in Indianapolis, Indiana is with us. Tony, how are you, sir?
I'm a man for all seasons, Ken.
And all time slots. Morning drive, afternoon drive, whatever. So I'm looking here
Hey, listen.
Yeah?
I have checked, we'll travel.
There you go. So I'm looking at a story in the Indy Star right now about a federal court hearing held today, judged to decide whether Pence can block Syrian refugee resettlement in Indiana. Basically, your governor, Mike Pence, arguing, look, we don't know that if these refugees from Syria have been fully vetted, we don't want to let these folks settle in Indiana without being fully vetted. Refugee immigration with the counter argument of, look, this is a federal matter. The state has no right or authority to try to intervene here. How big a story is this in Indiana right now, Tony?
Not huge.
Okay.
Not huge at all. It's really still that national conversation. You have plenty of people in Indiana who are focused on LGBT rights. That's become a big thing in Indiana because of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and the poor way that was put together. And it was put together in a poor way. The story of what comes afterwards is people thinking that now is a good time to go after a whole host of special rights and create a subset class of people, which is something I oppose in every iteration. But this is not something that's gotten a major talk. It's something that I've discussed quite often, including some very pointed words for Archbishop Joseph Tobin, who is of the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, who had a meeting with Governor Pence and heard what he had to say and said, yeah, we're bringing people in anyway, and did so. And when you take a look at what's happening around the world, you take a look at stories out of Germany, I've asked point blank for a comment, some type of remark, statement from the Archbishop on what's happening in Germany. I don't get that. I have yet to receive that. And that is not to say that the people coming to Syria, coming to Indiana, who are Syrian refugees, who may be families, for example, are going to be of any issue. It goes to the larger subject of whether or not anybody who's an elected official is allowed to try to protect the rights of the citizens within that state. What we have been told is that we, the citizens, have no power, have no say, and if we are to stand up for ourselves and fellow citizens, we will be told that we are racist and bigoted and afraid of orphans and afraid of widows. It is unbelievable the lengths they will go to in order to attack and demean people who want to actually make sure that their own children are safe. I believe in the safety of American children first. I don't apologize for it. I'll say it to anyone, anywhere, including the Archbishop Joseph Tobin of the Archdiocese of Indianapolis. I take a look at what happens in Germany. I believe that Governor Pence is wholly right on this subject. I wish him all the best in his defense of the citizens of Indiana, which is part of his purpose as governor. And I would love to get from the Archbishop just one statement on what's going on in Germany, going on about the women in Germany. When you hear stories of Christians and women and gays who fled Syria and other places, how they're being attacked in these German, basically asylums, if you will, places until people have a place to live. They can't stay there because they're being attacked. One statement. And then tell me why it's so good of us and kind of us and decent of us to take these people in when we do not know who they are. I think it is truly an obscene standpoint, an obscene point of view to favor one person's child over another, especially when that child is not a citizen of the United States. Borders do matter. Citizenship does matter. And we have a responsibility to the citizens of the United States that we cannot let go awry.
Talking again with Tony Katz, host of Tony Katz in the Morning News. All right, switching topics here, Tony. Did you watch the Democratic debate last night?
I did, because I hate myself.
I'm glad you did, because I didn't. In fact, I completely forgot that it was on, to be really honest with you. Were there any surprises for you in the Democratic debate last night?
Only that, you know, I it's good to know that Hillary is really going for that tailored look.
did you see that this was the outfit that she apparently wore when she gave a speech at Goldman Sachs?
She wore gold at Goldman Sachs?
I saw a picture showing her being introduced at Goldman Sachs, and it appeared to be the same outfit that she had on last night.
I didn't know that you could recycle the Mao look. I thought every day it had to be a new Mao. Listen, it was a very peculiar type of event where Hillary Clinton was so desperate to tie herself to Barack Obama, I thought she was a bondage fetishist. It was peculiar and strange and awkward. And when she realized that wasn't working, now she can be the next Bernie Sanders. Oh, yeah, Bernie. Oh, I'm just as left as Bernie. Oh, yeah, well, I hate them. Wait, you hate the other people? I hate the other people. Wait, who do I pander to next? And it's just sad to watch. You can mock Republicans or Trump all you wish, but you can't engage a concept of seriousness the way the Republican field can, even those who aren't in the race. Neither Bernie Sanders nor Hillary Clinton are serious people, which is to say, who could run a country to a proper place, to a value. These are really pathetic sops.
And yet, you know, it should be noted that at least within the Democratic primary, you know, people keep talking about the various splits, and certainly those who value honesty in New Hampshire did not vote for Hillary Clinton. But I wonder, too, if there's not a generation gap, which is weird that the, you know, the 70-something-year-old senator from Vermont would be the choice of young voters. But you look at Iowa, you look at New Hampshire, and it really does look like Hillary Clinton is having trouble appealing to let's say, people under the age of 40.
There's nothing appealing about her. There's nothing appealing about her. If you take a look at the exit polls out of New Hampshire, she took the 65 and older crowd.
Yeah.
She took the $200,000 a year and older crowd. Okay, congratulations to her. Of course they know there's nothing appealing about Hillary Clinton. These people aren't the Madeleine Albrights of the world who understand you vote with your vagina or you go to hell. These are millennials. Millennials aren't having the wool pulled over their eyes. They know crap when they see crap, and they're calling crap. You know, they know it. They see it. They smell it. And they're sick of it. So Bernie is certainly more attractive to them because at least this socialist is honest. The problem is socialism is a lie, so that's kind of a misnomer. But at least he's an honest socialist.
Well, I'm not even sure about that. I keep seeing a lot of Sanders supporters who I think are really unclear as to the definition of socialism. But, you know, so the other interesting thing that we've seen here.
Let me just say I agree with that. They can't define it. Bernie Sanders can't define it, but his record does define it. His history does define it. And you can clearly understand that the entire feeling of the Bernie Sanders campaign is the entire feeling of the Trump campaign, which is we're going to screw those rich people. We're going to screw them to the wall. We're going to bitch slap while we can. We're going to take their money. If they object, we're going to kill them. And ha, doesn't that feel good? Power, let me drink some of the goat blood. These are cultists. And at least Bernie Sanders is clear about the fact that he's okay with leading the cult and passing out the Kool-Aid.
All right. Now, in terms of turnout, though, in both Iowa and New Hampshire, what we've seen, Tony, the raw totals, the raw number of voters, more Republicans are turning out than Democrats right now.
Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised.
Is there an intensity gap right now among you know, folks who are either pulling for Clinton or Sanders, and folks on the right who have still a plethora of candidates to choose from? Are conservatives, are Republicans, are independents that are leaning towards Republicans, are they more motivated and excited to vote right now?
are people who lean right more. I would guess so, because they have options, and they have options that have talent and skill and brains and good stories and are actually proud of where they live. The option on the left side of the aisle is, which one of Ray Romano's parents do you want to vote for? That's it. Right? These are your options. Your options are two guys of Cuban descent who have incredible stories of perseverance. A guy who has at least been a governor in Jeb Bush, who's actually done something with his life. Donald Trump, just because you want to say screw off America, or you have the two judges from The Muppet Show. These are your options. What do you want?
Statler and Waldorf is what you're calling the Democratic field now.
How about the two old guys from Trading Places? I've been doing this all day.
Well, unfortunately, we only have like 2 minutes left on the program, so you'll have to...
By the way, that would be Randolph and Mortimer.
Randolph and Mortimer. Randolph, good for you. Mortimer. I was blanking on that. It's been a while since I've seen that Trading Spaces. I might have to watch that this weekend. But all right, so listen, we only do have a couple minutes left. I'm always fascinated by your weekend plans. You're playing hockey. You're eating donuts. There's always something fun that you're doing with WIBC. Do you have anything cool happening this weekend?
We have some snow coming this weekend, so clearly that's what it will it'll be about. It'll be a very cold weekend here in Indianapolis. The snow will come. There might be some sweating, and really that's it. A very low key, relaxed weekend for me. I'm really gearing up for CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. Will Cam Edwards be there?
Cam Edwards will in fact be there.
Hot diggity.
I'm excited about that. All right. Well, listen, Cam Edwards will see Tony Katz at CPAC if we don't talk to you before then. In the meantime, stay warm this weekend. Sledding sounds like a great option. Hot chocolate, hot toddies, Irish coffee, whatever. But we look forward to talking again very soon.
Take care.
All right, brother. Tony Katz with us here on NRA News. Cam and Company, host of Tony Katz in the Morning News on WIBC in Indianapolis, Indiana. Now, we do only have about 60 seconds left on the program, so let me issue one final reminder for you. There are 2 days left of the Great American Outdoor Show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The website is greatamericaoutdoorshow.org. You can go there. You can even, you know, find help getting your hotel reservation if you need one this past week or for the final weekend. You can find the show hours tomorrow. Opening at 9 a.m., 9 to 7 on Saturday, Sunday at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex, 10 to 5, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. So make sure if you have the opportunity to head to Harrisburg in the Great American Outdoor Show that you do so, because it's going to be, it has been a fantastic time. I think it is going to be a great end to the show this weekend. Really looking forward to talking with more friends of the program. We're going to be doing some interviews up there on Saturday and Sunday. But come by and see us. We'll have plenty of time to talk with you as well. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you here soon on another edition of NRA News, Cam and Company, sponsored by Nosler.